All right, and it says we are live. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Mark Young. I'm a geoarchaeologist at Flinders University. I actually got into this area of study because in 2017, I watched a podcast with Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson, and that inspired me to enroll at university to study archaeology and earth sciences, and ultimately the Young and Dryas impact hypothesis.
So it's so to hear you correctly, you're saying that Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson helped create a scientist. Is that what I'm getting here?
Absolutely, yes. And I know you've argued along those lines in some of your videos, and yes, you're absolutely right. And I'm not the only one.
No, I didn't think you would be, but it's nice hearing it from the horse's mouth. Not to call you a horse, but yeah. So what you've been working on here lately? I mean, as part of the Comet Research Group, obviously the Younger Dryas Impact Hypothesis is a pretty big focus of what you do. So what you've been on lately?
I've been doing quite a bit of well, not so much lab work recently. I've did quite a bit over the last couple of years, working on various projects. I've got three papers published, three others under review at the moment. So yeah, I've been doing some things. I've been doing computer modeling. I've been looking at the new shocked quartz proxy that we've found.
The shocked quartz proxy. What do we got there?
So we've found quartz grains from like seven or eight or nine different sites now that exhibit properties that resemble shock metamorphism. So it's slightly different to traditional shock metamorphism, where it's planar and they're all lined up in a row. Along the crystal structure is where they normally crack. But the ones that we've been finding, we believe they were fractured under intense heat, so they're already in a semi-plasticized state, kind of thing. So basically, along these cracks, they've got liquid, well, not liquid anymore, but amorphous silica, so silica glass. And that can only happen at very high temperatures. Well, opal is hydrated silica as well, but there's no hydration in this silica. So, yeah, there's really no other way it can form other than high temperatures.
Interesting. Very interesting. So, this isn't just something that they're going to be able to easily dismiss by accusing, by blaming some other agency on it.
Well, the thing is, like I said, it's different to traditional shock quartz. So that alone is enough for people like Christian Kobel to like, no, it's not shock quartz. And we've already had like quite a bit of pushback. We actually first published it for the Tal el Hamam airburst in the first paper. And one of there was actually a comment on that paper from a couple of Impact Mafia members, and they said that that's not shock quartz. Previous to that, we published the paper that establishes the theory for how it formed, and but to do that, we compared quartz from the Trinity explosion, from Barringer Crater, and another Russian atomic bomb detonation, and identical quartz grains were found with these features at those locations too. So, yeah. So obviously it's going to be an uphill battle to get it accepted, but
Yeah,
yeah.
it seems like everything is at this point, right? Yeah, there's quite a debate, it seems, by but everything that you guys say, but it quite often the opposition isn't really in your same wheelhouse, is it? I mean, a lot of the names on the paper, the comprehensive refutation, it's like half the names on that are anthropologists. And what do they have to say about this stuff?
Yeah, I touch on this in the article that I wrote for Graham's website, but initially most of the pushback, well, even through to today, most of the pushback has come from archaeologists rather than scientists. So a lot of geologists quietly agree. Like they look at the evidence and say, yeah, that's from an impact. Like, why would you say otherwise? There's no reason to say otherwise. Yet they find a way to like weasel word here and there and say, oh, this was formed by an independent thing that happened at the same time as these other independent things. And it's like, get a life. That's not how science works. The principle of parsimony.
That makes sense. It's I like how you said that the archaeologists and other and scientists, the scientists don't have a problem with it, but the archaeologists do. That's a little yep. savage. That's funny.
There is a distinction there. I can get into that a little bit if you like.
Yeah, go for it.
So, the obvious distinction is that there's a field of archaeology called archaeological science. So, why is that field? Why does that field exist if they are scientists? But that's not the only thing. So science typically works when a paradigm is overturned by a new paradigm, right? But in archaeology, there are multiple concurrent paradigms working simultaneously. And that's just how it is. That's accepted by all archaeologists. So there's the scientific archaeology is called new archaeology, and it came around in the 80s, and it's basically the use of science to determine archaeological history and craft the narrative, basically. Whereas before that, they were relying on processualism and other things, which is like postmodernism. So
basically, they switched over to a more scientific mode now, you're saying?
Than it used yes.
to. And a lot of the... So would I be correct in thinking that part of what you're saying there is that like the old models and stuff basically are kind of tainted with this outdated ideology that constructed them?
To some degree, yeah. Yep. And I think it's all about theoretical paradigms. So it's the way you approach the archaeological theory of what you're investigating. So there are archaeologists who are scientists. But most archaeologists aren't.
That's fair. I'm sure they love that. There is a lot of there's a lot of stuff that I would say informs archaeology that is scientific. But I guess kind of my smoking gun example I always go to is the carbon dating of the Great Pyramid. The science is clear. It's yep. 200 and some odd years older than the written record is. But they've found a way to posits some burning existed in some old wood hypothesis, and there's no evidence for this, none at all, except for the carbon dates don't line up. It's just a way to reconcile the data with their narrative, and that is pretty much the opposite of science, right? I mean,
absolutely. They're starting from a point, and they're making the conclusions fit their point. Yeah.
So that is it's that definitely. And there's a few other things too, like I've talked about on a lot of things that are. Where the framework takes precedence and then the evidence can really start to slip as to, like the sea peoples is a great example. The evidence can get pretty shoddy as to whether or not they were. If the guy's really wanting a sea people to be one, and that's not, I don't really care one way or the other. I'm not saying the sea peoples didn't exist. It's when they try to identify things about them that because they believe the sea peoples were a thing and they're looking for these lost sea peoples, a lot of these guys will get pretty shitty with their standard of evidence just to, yeah, these guys are sea peoples. And it's like, well, maybe. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And as soon as one person makes a sort of unsupportable claim and someone picks it up and runs with it, it's like introducing error at the start. It gets magnified as you go along. And quite a bit of that happens in science. Like if there's a dodgy paper and it's well cited and there's other research based on it, quickly corrupts the whole system, like that Alzheimer's research example from a few years back.
I'm not aware of that.
There was a major groundbreaking paper in Alzheimer's that basically misdirected the whole of Alzheimer's research for a decade or so because it was wrong. Like, and they've just found out recently that it was wrong. So they've been doing nothing for the last 10 years.
Shit. Wow. I was not aware of that. Yeah, I need to broaden my horizons, I guess, because that's an interesting story in and of itself. It's bad enough when the wrong science just, you know, misinforms you as to where the big rocks came from, but it's a whole other thing when it's got, you know, a decade of people that are not getting possible treat. Even worse than that, here's some snake oil, effectively. It's got the badge of approval on it, but it's still snake oil.
And all the billions of research dollars that were wasted.
Yeah, that's a crazy one right there too. That's when I did see when I was doing research a few months ago that the medical community is like almost all of the top 10 papers that have been retracted and are still being cited. Almost all of those are medical, and that's kind mm-hmm. of wild. I guess not considering what we just came out of a few years ago. There was quite a little medical. So yeah. Right, that's since it got injected with politics, like everything, we'll probably our grandkids will still be discussing that one as to what that'll be the JFK of our generation.
It'll be a case study for a long time.
Yeah. Yep. Crazy stuff. Excuse me. So, how far are you from your PhD? I know you're working on that, right?
Yeah. So I've got a deadline coming up. Whether I make that or not, we'll decide whether I continue. It's going to be close, but I've got just over a year left. So, damn. Yeah.
Very nice. And then you'll get to publish papers with your name at the top instead of, well, I guess you could do that some now, right? You still get used to that quite a bit too, like you've got mm-hmm. PhD status. So,
I was meant to be first author in one of the other papers, but I didn't end up contributing enough, so ended up further down the list, but that's all right.
Well, you got to name a lot of interesting papers. And a lot of articles on Hancock's website, which is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, it's one way to get things out there. Particularly the Sun et al. Article that I just published. Nowhere else wanted to touch it, so I tried to post it on PubPeer first, but the moderators there wouldn't let me post it unless I removed all the stuff about the data manipulation and all that stuff, which is kind of ridiculous because that's the whole reason that platform exists, supposedly, is to identify this sort of thing and tackle it. And then I emailed Retraction Watch with all the evidence, and they didn't even bother replying to me, the supposed bastion of scientific integrity that is Retraction Watch, because one of the cretins that runs it, that Cheshire Cat guy, I don't know if you've seen him on Twitter, but he's like vehemently against the Young and Dry stuff, so he would never touch something that attacks the critics of it, I guess.
That's short-lived. That might work, okay? They might like temporarily win the narrative that way, but long term, that shit is ugly, and people see, you know, when you stand in front of the one closet door, people eventually want to know what you're hiding, and so it's like you can't. I've said it a number of times. It's like really frustrating to watch this thing happen, because the guy who's really into science, it's like this debate degenerate. Like I've only been watching the comet research part of it in the last year and a half or so, but it reading the papers and stuff, it like almost immediately just tipped right off from the data, just right into mudslinging. And then it's like, at that point, you almost can't trust. Like it gets to the point where, like I, like we talked about right before we started, it's like I start having problems trusting the hard data. Trusting the individuals and their narrative is one thing, but when I start having a problem trusting the data itself, it's like, damn, dude, now where are we?
Yep. It's especially bad with the Young and Dry stuff, because the main critics that persist to today, they were there day one in the audience of the press conference, like basically denying it. Mark Boslow in particular, he was sitting on discussion panels, like him and Caroline Shoemaker and a couple of other impact mafia people, and with the Comet Research Group on the other side, there was a big discussion panel at this Laramie conference. And it had been like a year or so since they announced it, and they were already shitting on it. They were already like saying, oh, this is physically impossible, defies physics, all this stuff. But it doesn't.
No, it's...
It just defies the model that they're running on in their head. Like they don't understand what we're trying to say happened. They keep continually misrepresenting the impact scenario.
Yeah, that's That is something that I noticed. The missing data set is one thing right along those lines. Now I've talked about this a little bit on Twitter, but would you care to weigh in on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah.
Please let's hear what a scientist has to say about this.
Is this the Greenland data set?
This is the Greenland Nano Diamonds data set, the one that was supposedly in the National Snow and Ice Data Center, and it's not carbon at all.
So the science for this was done in conjunction with a PBS NOVA documentary that was debuted in 2009. So NOVA basically funded these guys to go over and have a look in the ice and look for nanodiamonds. And so they obviously claim to have found them. The layer they got it from isn't established to be the Young and Dryas in any other literature. So either they picked that layer and they were right, because Paul Maevsky, he's the guy who plotted the original GISP2 ice core data, and he's the one who led the expedition. He knows the ice better than anyone. So he has a pretty good chance of looking at it and saying, that's where I think the Young and Dryas is. One of the arguments from critics is that stratigraphy isn't developed there, so that how do they know they even sampled the Young and Dryas? Well, because there's fucking nanodiamonds in it. That's how they know. Unless you're trying to... Well, the implication is, and people were emailing PBS in the background saying, well, they sprinkled those nanodiamonds in there and then measured them. That's what they were saying. And so the documentary got pulled, and this whole thing in the background with Boslow, he was requesting samples and all this stuff, and obviously it's ice core samples, so there's a few milligrams of sample to start with, and so Alan told him there's nothing left to send you, mate, and that's enough for him to say, well, obviously you salted it then. So it was eventually published in the 2010 Kurbatov paper. And I suppose the idea that the data never made it to the repository is a bad thing. Like, there's no reason why it shouldn't be there. And it is bad that it's not there. But at the same time, it's not enough to retract the paper.
The paper is still there.
There's millions of papers that have been published that the data no longer exists for.
Yeah,
we're not going to go and retract 100 years worth of science because the data's not there to comb through with a fine tooth comb today to confirm their observations.
Yeah, I saw one of the figures I saw was I think it was 5% of the earth sciences papers have missing data, where there's and. The big one to me, when I looked into this, was there's two things that was a really big deal. One was Kurbatov is considered one of the premier ice core specialists in the world, quite possibly the premier. So he's almost above reproach. And the idea of smuggling little pieces of nanodiamond into one of these labs where they go out of their way, where they coat the saws with Teflon so they don't put metal into the freaking ice core and shit, that's pretty high accusation there. That's a pretty big accusation against the man. And the fact that the Journal of Glaciology has kept the paper up, you know, Boslow has crawled up their ass about it.
The
paper's still there. Those are the things that to me made it seem like a little bit like it was the mountain out of a molehill. But the melting of the limited amount of sample, that right there is a huge part of it that doesn't really get portrayed when they talk about the samples not being spread around. It's just like, well, he asked for a sample and they told him no. Well, yeah. You get on a helicopter or get an airplane, dude. Go fly up there and dig up your own ice core. It's cheap, right? Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a propaganda piece that surprisingly a lot of people aren't even aware of. When I was talking to Randall Carlson today, he wasn't aware that the data set was missing and being used as a weapon. It just wasn't on his radar. He's too busy.
Yeah.
being into floods and shit. He doesn't care about the detractors.
Yeah, I think if it mattered much at all, he might have known about it. But like, even like when I was talking with you about it, I told you it's not even something that's on my radar. Like,
but it is on the other side, and that's why I feel like I got to address it. I mean, I've been emailed by I won't give the guy's name, but he's a pretty big YouTuber that is in the archaeology space. And when we were talking about the Younger Dryas stuff, that was one of the things he said was like, well, didn't Boslow ask for a data set and they tell him to fuck off? Well, kind of, sort of. Here, let me explain a little. And I just kind of gave him a paragraph. But
if we want to talk about missing data, Boslow has some missing data of his own.
How's that?
So apparently the story goes that Boslow requested some carbon spherules from Alan West that contained nanodiamonds because he wanted to confirm the presence of nanodiamonds, basically. So what this guy did, Alan sent the spherules to him. They didn't look for nanodiamonds. They carbon dated one of them, and it came back with an age of 200 years. So the problem is, Alan sent him multiple spherules, and they only dated one of them. They only published, they never published the results. They only said, oh, we tested it and it came out this. They never published the results of the other carbon spherules that they analyzed. They never published the results of the nanodiamonds investigation that they did, if they did it at all. Like, if you request a sample to look for nanodiamonds, you don't date it first. You look for the nanodiamonds, you say there's nanodiamonds in there, and then you date it.
Sure.
If
sense.
They had done that, because dating destroys it.
Okay.
So if they had done that and the spherule did come back to 200 years old, that's all the evidence you need to say there's fraud here. Because a carbon spherule 200 years old with nanodiamonds in it, obviously they've been manufactured, right? So, yeah. But they didn't do that. They just said, well, this spherule is 200 years old, so therefore your Younger Dryas layer isn't 12,800 years old. But that's dumb. There's so many ways that carbon can infiltrate into the soil column, like roots. It could even have been like a speck of dust in the lab that landed in their sample. Like
one, yeah, I was gonna say the amount of problems that they have with contamination in their still, even after going through all that stuff, it's huge. It's huge. Mm. They have the stuff they used to even drill with has chemicals, including carbon, that can contaminate the lubricant for the drill. And it's a big problem is if that leaks into the sample. There's all kinds of stuff that that I've looked into. That's it's not that the science isn't accurate. The problem is that if they've got a dozen different carbon spherules to test, they should be testing all of them because they will have outliers. They absolutely will have outliers.
And the lab they use to test it is the one that's run and owned by Vance Holliday, who's one of the main detractors. So they didn't send it to some independent lab.
Oh, well, they got counted, right? It counts, I guess, but it's like it's the same thing that they always complain about with the Comet Research Group. It's like, oh, you
exactly.
guys are publishing your own work. What the fuck are you doing? You're publishing your own counterpoint.
Yeah, they want to try and paint the CRG as some circle jerk that's like just manufacturing data and publishing it, like pushing it out the door when and they try to characterize it as like a faction of scientists who are spreading misinformation and all this stuff, but then they fail to see that they are the same thing, but opposite. It's a small faction that's devoted to debunking this idea, regardless of the evidence for it.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. It's and it's funny, one of the narratives you hear, my video that's coming out tomorrow, I'll touch base, a little spoiler for that. I touch base on this tomorrow. One of the things they talk about all the time is they say Glacial Lake Missoula was the cause of all the flooding and we can explain it all. But just in March, I think it was, of this year, a paper was published by real scientists that it's that the Moses Coulee, which is part of the channeled scablands. One of the Coulees here is their model doesn't account for how it was formed, and they're looking at subglacial lakes as the potential agency that created that. So geology, the anthropologists and archaeologists out there might be quick to tell us that the data is all settled and we know exactly where this came from, but the geologists, they are of quite the opposite opinion. There is a lot still to learn here. And the way that they got burnt by J. Harlan Brett's actually figuring this stuff out and being just demonized for it for decades, they learned something there. Geologists, they still have their dogma, but they learned something there compared to archaeology in Clovis First.
Yeah.
Where and you can see it in the way geologists treat Brett's. He's put on a pedestal. But if you talk about Jack Sinkmars or you talk about Tom Dillahay, most archaeologists will be like, oh, their career was fine. And they don't put him on no pedestal for what they did. They're just like, oh, they were okay. They did all right. They survived the slings and arrows. It's quite a bit different narrative that comes out of the two camps. And as a result, well, again, it's no surprise that most of the names or half the names on that paper are the comprehensive refutation paper really have no, they may as well be electricians for all the fucking point that they have to weigh in on that shit.
Yep. All of them appeared on previous papers. Most of them appeared on at least a dozen previous papers that are critical. But the one thing they managed to do for that one is that they dragged out Pataev. So the guy who originally published the Platinum in 2013, Boslow's been harassing him by email every few days for months, and he's like, come on out. He's probably, well, I'm not saying he'd said this, but he's like, come on our paper and like distance yourself from this crap because these people are using this to further misinformation and pseudoscience and all this stuff. And he's like, if you shut up, I'll do it. Like, because in the 2013 paper, they're pretty clear that it's not a normal event and the most likely scenario is an impact. But then they come out in this paper and say, oh, well, not so sure about that, all this. And it's like, you can picture Boslow standing there with a gun to this guy's back saying, smile and nod, just say, just walk it back a little bit. You don't have to go crazy. Just like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, David, I want to say thanks for the super chat, and we're doing good. I'm doing good anyway. I think you're doing all right, aren't you, Mark?
Yeah, quite good, yeah.
And I want to thank George there at the Cosmic Summit. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Howdy, George.
Appreciate that, guys.
And howdy, Chris Cottrell as well.
All right. Lost a fortune this year, LOL. Yeah, you and me both. The last few years have been a lot rougher. But anyway, things are looking better now that I've got somewhat of an audience. I've done eBay for a long time, and the invention of Google Lens was a little bit savage on guys that had a memory bank in their head. But I digress. The one thing that I found really interesting about the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis is, as far as the opposition goes, is I can't tell you how many times I've seen it boiled down to these guys are just a bunch of creationists. And I mean, Boslow says it. Of course, me being me, my immediate answer is, well, that doesn't really fucking matter. It's not, this is a scientific hypothesis. Can you address it on the merits of the science? But it just shows, well, we just recently had that paper by Powell, wasn't it? That just went off on the ethics side of it. And it's like so brutal. And when you go back to Carl Sagan, even, and he's like saying that this is like the antithesis of science, and guys are talking about actually this is cause for censorship. I mean, and nowadays this is just running amok, and you've got people. I'm glad that the Journal of Scientific Ethics actually took the paper because, I mean, good God, he's associated with the Comet Research Group. So.
Yeah.
But I guess this Journal of Scientific Ethics, if they started playing that game, they would kind of have to rebrand themselves or something, wouldn't they?
Yeah, we'll see if they want to publish another one from him, because actually he published one in 22 and the journal Research Ethics. So I assume, I don't know, but I would assume he would have gone to them again and said, hey, do you want this as well? And maybe they said no, so he had to find another ethics journal. But yeah, we'll see.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. As a guy who's like into science, but is also into like alternate stuff, seen behind the curtain, so to speak, in those last year and a half, actually in communicating with and around scientists, there's really a distinct line, it seems to me. It's almost like the more active they are on the addressing opposing arguments on social media, it's like the less scientific they are. It's not a set rule, but it kind of seems to be like, you know, your little Venn diagram, it overlaps heavily, where the more they do debunking, the less scientific they get, to where at a certain point the argument is they're a bunch of creationists, right? I mean, what good is that? That's no better than God did it as far as science goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like anyone else who spends 18 hours a day on social media, right? You're going to be mentally ill. And that's literally what Hoops does. He just spends his whole day on social media chatting back to the little dudes with two followers that message him. He's like typing to him, like hella angry. It's like, come on, dude, get a life. Like, aren't you a scientist? Don't you have research to do? Don't you have stuff to teach? Like, get off of social media and touch grass.
Well, fuck. I mean, if you want to, since he likes to complain about white supremacy in Atlantis hunting, I mean, the University of Kansas has got plenty of bones still in violation of NAGPRA that are in his own department. He could just like go sift through some of those. Maybe I'm sure that would be better suited than yelling at guys like us about racism. But, you know, what do I know?
It's funny because there are academics at Kansas University who support the Young Dryas.
I'm so sure they like, are.
Just go down the halls and talk to one of them.
Why would he do that? He'd lock the door when they got close. But if his social media habits are any indication of how he handles the real world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Him and Boslow both are, like, Flint was a lot slower to block me. Boslow and Hoops both blocked me immediately as soon as I made a salient argument that disagreed with them. They were just done. There's like, if you say things that they can mock, well, they're fine with that. But the second you're like, hey, man, what the fuck's up with that? Psst, out. And
do you want to know something funny about that?
Yes. So
I obviously have a few Twitter accounts. I have like just a dummy one so I can spy on people who blocked me. And I accidentally followed you on it.
Uh-oh.
For literally 5 seconds. I unfollowed you straight away.
And you got blocked.
And then I found that Hoops had blocked me from that. So he's got an auto block for anyone who interacts with you or anyone else that he dislikes.
Good God. I mean, that's like, you know, that's it. You know about the Khmer Rouge, right? And how it's like they would question 10 people and they would end up with 100 new suspects. And that's how you end up with, like, I mean, I interact with a lot of people, man. I freaking tagged Ninja the other day. Are you gonna block Ninja? Because what the come on. It's insane. It really is insane. But I don't know what like you say, they spend all day on the internet. I guess that, you know, that's the equivalent of having me on their front lawn or something. I don't know. But maybe, and it's just, you know, an idea, but maybe if they would keep their arguments pointed and actually adhering to the data, then they wouldn't give people like myself a big fat loose thread to pull on and say, look at this guy not being a scientist. They would just do science instead of and I get social media, don't mistake, I'm not saying these guys shouldn't have their access to social media, but if I came on here and said, I'm Dan the electrician, here's where I work, here's my credentials as electrician, tweets are my own opinions, not those of the person that I work for, and then I start just babbling about electricity all the time, I'm no longer Dan the social media guy, I'm Dan the electrician on social media. And that's what these guys are doing. So when they don't separate their professional and personal selves, you get this, guys. I don't know what to tell you. You're going to get called out for being unscientific. You're showing your ass while you're talking about science.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we got a bunch of people talking about how great we are here, but nobody's asking us any questions that seem like something we need to address that I've seen so far. So when we talk about the different things in the comet research group and in the different people there, there's a lot of the guys like Alan West that have been, they kind of just demonized the crap out of him. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or is that something you just kind of shrug your shoulders and just stick your nose in the books?
Well, Alan is by far the most productive member in the CRG. He runs the whole show. He's got everything planned out 6 months in advance for what papers to, because we've obviously been doing analyses for straight flat out for 16 years now, so there's a backlog of data. So it's very well planned out. And if you were to want to discredit the Comet Research Group, then he's the number one person you would attack, because if you could take him out, then the Comet Research Group is done, basically. I mean, Chris Moore will obviously pick up and continue in his footsteps, but like, he is the core of the Comet Research Group for sure.
Okay. And Robert Stahl mentions the black mat layer, and George tells us there's no creationists in the CRG and we need some for diversity. But you want to mention the talk about the black mat layer for a little bit? That's definitely been a point of controversy.
Yeah, sure. So when it was first proposed, it's not really said so much in the first paper, but there is a common theme of proponents to kind of represent it as a burn layer, but that's not what it is. There's only been high levels of burning proxies found in a few locations. It results from algal mats and rotting vegetation. It's basically the post-catastrophe landscape, moist, damp, windy, I suppose, like a desolated landscape. So the impact proxies aren't found in the layer. They're found in the contact between the layer below it and the black mat. So if you picture pre-catastrophe, the landscape's just there. The impact comes in, rains all the proxies down, and then the aftermath of the impact gets put on top of it. So all the fires and all the crap that goes on afterwards gets buried on top of it, which essentially preserves that material at the bottom.
Okay. So when they're trying to say that this is just rotted swamp material and shit like that, what do you have to say about that? I guess I should just say, I don't want to lead you anywhere.
Well, they're not explicitly wrong to say that, because most of it is algae, most of it's vegetation. However, coming back to what I said earlier, there's only been one systematic study on the characterization of the black mat, and it was done by a graduate student of Vance Holliday, funded by his laboratory. So you have to question, because if they want to say that the Comet Research Group are frauds and they're manufacturing these conclusions, then they've demonstrated that they're just as zealous as they try and say that we are. So why wouldn't they do the same thing? Like, just because, I mean, if they want to say because Vance Holliday is a big deal. Like, he's one of the top guys in this field. And so, but we also have some top guys in their fields. So it's not like a bunch of amateurs arguing against like well-established guys. Like Jim Kennett, for example, he's legendary paleoceanographer. Like, you don't get more qualified than him.
Right on. Yeah, that's one thing that they definitely try to couch it as a real scientist versus fake scientist argument. That is very, very, from the outside looking in, that was very much the way that they tried to make this whole argument seem.
And I actually have something on that point.
Well, go ahead. Sorry. Oh, you're all right. So, I was just yelling at the stone.
Just a couple of days ago, there was this big paper that came out in Earth Science Reviews But one of the authors is Christian Koberl, who's like one of the leaders of the Impact Mafia. And it's basically a treatise on the pseudoscience surrounding the Impact community and all this stuff. And I'll read you this quote here. Because of the attractive theme, the unusual activity of some authors, especially from outside the geosciences, astrophysics, astrobiologists, theoretical physics, may become an embarrassing problem. Their superficial approach results from limited knowledge of the specifics of the geological record. Thanks to the momentarily stunning idea, many papers were published on such easy discoveries and odd paradigm-shifting hypotheses. Note, for example, the recent bizarre concepts of such and such. In protest against an extensive burden of useless literature, the speculative Younger Dryas impact scenario was refuted in a comprehensive review by Holliday et al.
Comprehensively refuted. They always like to, that comprehensive refutation, I swear, you go watch Graham Hancock on Facebook or Twitter or Randall Carlson, and they just post anything about YDIH and so half a dozen people. They don't even talk. They just comprehensive refutation. Yeah. When yeah. They walk to me like,
gotcha. And that's the whole reason they published that paper. Just so it's a one hit deal. They can cite it and say, oh, it's been debunked. But there's a new paper coming up from Martin Sweatman in the next week or two that will offer a detailed rebuttal to that.
Awesome.
We tried to get it published as a comment on the original article, but they would only give us 5,000 words to respond to a 200,000 word paper.
What the? Seriously? How does that even?
We tried a few other potential outlets, and no one would take it because it's over 100,000 words itself. But it'll be coming out in EBS and Creating Impacts in the next few weeks.
Nice. Yeah, I've got Martin coming on here in, I want to say, I think Tuesday, I believe it is. I'll have to check my emails, but I think it's Tuesday. Me and Dr. Sweatman are going to talk, and he's going to discuss his paper about the Göbekli Tepe clock hypothesis, and that's pretty interesting. Nice. Stuff there. I like this. I like Martin. I like Dr. Sweatman. I've spoken with him a bit since I started doing this, and he's a really interesting person. He's a really cool guy. He's very, very intelligent. And it took me some explaining for him to even get why I like a lot of the debunking stuff that I do. He understands like the arguing point by point, but a lot of the, where I just kind of go with this over, he's just like, why do you even care? Like, well, I'm not a scientist, man. I'm a YouTuber. Sorry.
Yeah.
This bothers me. Go ahead.
Martin's a great guy. It was great to meet him last year after having talked on and off for the last 4 or 5 years. That Sun et al. Article that I wrote probably wouldn't have happened if it weren't for him, because he's the one who put me onto the whistleblower to start with. So,
Dabbler's Den. I would love to discuss the Carolina Bays at some point. I'm assuming, I'm not sure who that is by the screen.
It's name. Chris Cottrell.
Okay, I was going to say this isn't. I'm pretty sure from what they've been saying that this is a sciencey person there. So, hell yeah, I'm down with that. I don't. I'm not sure what. Did I just get hacked? Is that not? That's similar for foreign currency. I'm feigning ignorance. Sorry. Yes. Thank you to you guys for these super chats there. I appreciate it very much. The way that Dr. Sweatman's hypothesis on the archaeoastronomy thing with the Göbekli Tepe's Pillar 43. That was one that I really found the way that it was reacted to was it had just a lot of ignorance. It was like this wasn't about the debunkings of it. Like, they just call it nonsense, or this is just extrapolating from a single point that doesn't even make sense. And it's like, how do you put it? Well, The first thing is, if you read a basic paper on how they do archaeoastronomy, they talk about forming a bridgehead. Giulio Magli's talked about this. And so they'll start from a point that they can make a point of reference, in this case, Scorpio. Okay, we can, if we're going, and then they extrapolate from there. And then they use math to weed out to chance, right? To try to knock it into probability. So when the attacks are, he's starting from an arbitrary point, or he's a mathematician, what's he even doing here? These are like two, right off the bat, that's just like extreme ignorance. You don't even belong commenting on this shit off the bat. But these are this is the standard arguing points from historians and archaeologists that you see all over the internet, which, big surprise, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But and it doesn't mean that Sweatman's paper is right by any stretch of the means. It doesn't mean that his interpretation of Pillar 43 is right. What it does mean is it's not getting its fair shake in the halls of academia. It's getting discarded out of hand because of its association with Graham Hancock. And people that don't really know anything about it are the ones that are poking holes in it.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. 100% agree. I was quite a fan of that paper back when it first came out. I was just starting at university then. So I actually wrote a paper on it, an essay about it. And I ended up sculpting one of the artifacts from Göbekli Tepe out of sandstone as well for one of our projects that we had to do. But obviously, it's not just starting from one point and like extrapolating, because the constellation map is pretty close. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Anyone has to admit that it's pretty bloody close. Like, and it's not enough to say that 100% conclusively that that's what it is,
mm-hmm.
but you can't just dismiss it out of hand.
Yeah, that's
and. Obviously, I understand that it's important to interpret the other ones as well, but then even if they did come out with something different for those ones, that doesn't mean that that first one isn't, because, like, if I've got a poster of Led Zeppelin over here, that doesn't mean I don't like Black Sabbath, which I've got over there on the wall. So it's like, they might have carved that onto this pillar, and then other pillars were for teaching other things. So, but I have seen like people like Matt Simpson reported on it, the interpretation of the symbology there as teaching aids for hunting and seasonal stuff. As an archaeologist, that is more convincing to me than the constellation map. Because it's more important to their everyday lives. So, but that doesn't mean that it's wrong. Yeah. So,
it could also well be a combination of the things, or it could be even that it was recording a time in the sky, but it had nothing to do with comet impact. There's 1,001 different ways that this could be that. Because his work is just being categorically rejected, we don't get anywhere. And you could compare this with Brett's, with the flood. When J. Harlan Brett's was first talking about the flood that carved the channeled scablands, and nobody wanted to agree that it was actually a flood. Yeah. Well, there's a certain point where it's like everybody's saying, well, where'd the water come from? And he's like, I don't know where the water came from. And so rather than doing research themselves, they were just like, well, fuck this hypothesis. But the reality of it is, literally, now they all accept it because of the work by another guy who was active at that very time. So it's like these things just happen over and over and over again, right? It's like we just do the same. The difference is that people eventually come around when the data weighs in and the words aren't staring them in the face. But I have a feeling that social media is going to make things a little bit different, because things don't go away. Right. And a scientist doesn't want to be wrong. It's easy to retract a paper, right? I mean, if I wrote a paper, you could retract one of your papers, I assume. Right. But
yep.
you can't really go pull it off of social media, you can pull it off social media, but 200 people screenshotted that thing before you got rid of it. And there's an internet archive and you just forget it. It's done. So I think that's a little speculation here, but I think that a lot of scientists are profoundly more afraid than they were a generation ago of putting something into print that's incorrect. It's going to haunt them till they're 80.
Well, yes and no. I would say the dogmas have always been strong. Like Clovis First, for example, that was a generation ago by now, surely. Like,
oh, sure.
Even before that, there's so much.
Oh, yeah. Clovis First was predated by Folsom First. Same exact scenario. If the Wikipedia page even has a quote that says you would lose your career, basically, if you went against the Folsom First ideology.
Yeah.
So it does stretch back. It seems to me more, maybe it's because it's harder for me to do the research and see it, but it's a lot more of a cross-discipline kind of attacks on things now, where you read about Brett's and it's all geologists coming after him, or you read about Clovis First and it's all archaeologists. And now we're getting like pretty much anything. You get all kinds of people weighing in on that's like, man, you know, fucking credentials here. What even? I got my name on that paper though, buddy. part of team, whatever.
Yeah, so that's, I suppose that's the other side of the coin to the whole interdisciplinary research. The emphasis on interdisciplinary research in the last few decades has been, because that's very important.
Sure.
Obviously, if you're only trained in one field, you can't address things like the Younger Dryas stuff because it requires a good knowledge of at least three or four different fields. And you need people like Randall Carlson and Alan West, these polymaths, who can take all these diverse data sets and synthesize them into a narrative. And whether or not that narrative is correct, it doesn't really matter. It'll get worked out as we go because that's how science works.
Yes. But only if it gets its fair day in court. You've probably seen me say it before, but there was a time, one of my favorite quotes, actually, I'll probably butcher it a bit, but Einstein said that the theory of relativity is incomprehensible to him now that the mathematicians have gotten a hold of it. And
yeah.
This is a great example of like the way, you know, the human psyche is worth a lot of different brains, a lot of different types of thinking out there. And that cold, hard, calculating debunker with the dreamer, the Graham Hancocks and the Randall Carlsons of the world that really just look and they see more than most people do when they look at that stuff. Historically, you put the two together and you get fucking the theory of relativity actually working. You get the dreamer that comes up with it, the mathematicians that crunch it out. Or maybe they rejected it, it took the two together, that dance, to make science what it is now. And I feel like they're just punching, the debunkers just ignore everything. And as a result, the dreamers are left to their own devices. If it wasn't for the Comet Research Group, we wouldn't have very many scientists that were openly part of Team Dreamer or whatever, right? And that's kind of a sad thing.
Yep. And with the Young and Dry stuff, for every vocal critic, there's at least 50 scientists who don't feel the need to project their whatever's onto social media. Like they agree behind the scenes quietly, they email support and all this stuff, and it's just ridiculous how a small group of very vocal people can run the narrative on these things.
It's that way with a lot of stuff. I mean, if you take your opinion of all kinds of different things, as an American, my opinion of a British football player is very much, or a football fan, excuse me, a soccer fan is very much tainted by stereotypes of the handful of guys that jump the fence and beat the shit out of the other teammate, the other fan. But that's clearly a rarity, or they would have outlawed the game 100 years ago. But that's the way that it gets, and that goes with everything. I mean, ask somebody who hates communists what they think about a communist. Ask somebody who hates a capitalist what they think about capitalists, and you're going to hear something that is a very tiny group of people that adhere to that ideology actually express. But It doesn't matter. Those are the ones that get heard. If you want to be a mundane hypothesis in the alternate history sphere, for example, a mundane hypothesis probably won't get much traction. It's just not very flashy. But one that's got some legs to it, one that's got a little flash, a little pizzazz, well, that's gonna get some attention.
Yep.
That's why the scientific process is so important, because social media shouldn't be the determining factor on whether or not something is scientific or not, or warrants more research. But frustratingly, that seems to be the case in some things.
Yeah, exactly. Just to riff off of something that Chris just said in the chat, the same guys are editing Wikipedia too. I've got a story about Wikipedia.
Oh, please.
So, obviously, I'm maybe a top five expert on the Young Dryas impact in the world, like Alan West, Martin Sweatman. There's a few above me, but I went to try and edit the Young Dryas impact hypothesis page, of course, and because I noticed that they were missing quite a lot. So initially there was a bit of pushback with me editing, but then a few guys, like Wikipedia admins from outside of the pseudo space, they came in and said, "Well, what are you guys doing? He's not doing anything wrong." Yeah. So what they did, they decided to incorporate the page of the Comet Research Group into the page of the Younger Dryas Impact Hypothesis Group. And by doing so, they made me posting there a conflict of interest.
Well, isn't that cute?
Yeah.
That's some sneaky ass shit right there. That especially considering the way that Hoops will try to go around and share those pages like he doesn't edit them. Like, check out what Wikipedia has to say, but it's like his own work that he's just erasing his name off of when he passes it over to you. That's really, really underhanded.
Yeah, so they came in, they complained about me, they got slapped down, and then they found a way to work around it. And I inquired with Wikipedia. I got some other admins to come in and have a look, and they said, "Why are you doing this?" And it's like, "Well, the Comet Research Group are the only people who really support it, and they're the proponents, and so it's important to have a section on them in the article." And it's like, they had their own separate article to begin with. You've deleted a lot of that article to make it small enough to fit into this one, and you've only done it so that you can stop me from posting facts about the Younger Dryas on there. And one thing that absolutely blew my mind about Wikipedia is that they don't like you using your primary sources. They only want you to use secondary sources.
Why is that?
Because the use of primary sources counts as data synthesis, because I'm using, even if they say this in the paper, I'm using these sources to write my own narrative and come up with conclusions that they didn't necessarily make in the paper. And even if they did make those conclusions in the paper, they still won't let it on there. Like, one example is the 2022 Sepulveda et al. Paper, where they identified a Y chromosome bottleneck in and a pre-Younger Dryas South American population. They're like 19,000 years old, they've got genetics for in South America, and they disappeared at the Younger Dryas onset. And the authors explicitly said in the paper, it was probably the Younger Dryas impact that killed these guys, and yet they wouldn't let me use that paper in the article.
Weird. Yeah, that's really messed up, because that's the kind of thing that you would think would be like illustrate a consensus, right? I mean, this would show that this is accepted in other places, but that's...
So rather than allowing me, an expert, to use these sources to synthesize a narrative, they outsource that role to someone else who doesn't know fucking anything about it on some random website that nobody cares about that can't be edited by Wikipedia. So they want you to... They're fine as long as you do it off-site. They don't care.
Wow, that's so fucking weird, man. And Hoops, of course, has got this all figured out and works that to the nth degree. It's funny, he brags about editing these pages, but he does so little editing of them that people would say, "Well, he only edited 5% of it," but it's like, it's pretty clear, pretty clear that his fingerprints are all over the things, and he's proud of his work there. it's one of the things that kind of blew my mind, because it kind of showed kind of a little bit of a dinosaur mentality, because Wikipedia is starting to become like, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I make a video, I'm hard pressed to cite Wikipedia. I mean, I'll use it as a jumping off point and click the links that it takes me to and see if those are worth a fuck. But Wikipedia in and of itself, I mean, I've seen, it's just not, and this just made it worse. It was already bad enough when it was like, oh, you got, it was bad enough when we already had a bunch of people saying that, you know, to make it whatever bullshit they wanted to say about anything. You just put it on Wikipedia, right? And you say, oh, yeah, Charlie Sheen's made of like 3.5 grams of cocaine, I think was one, or something like that. Half tiger, half cocaine, or some shit. Mm-hmm, but, you know, that's one thing. It's LOL. But this is an entirely different thing. This isn't the kid spray painting the sign here. This is somebody airbrushing it very carefully to make it say something different. This is fucking gross. And to see that it's academics doing it, that's underhanded as fuck.
Yeah. So I like to view it as like a two-tiered system. So you've got the academics at the top who are like the scourge commanders, who are like commanding the armies of the undead to swarm over these things. And then you've got the actual army of the undead, which is what a lot of these Wikipedia admins are. Like they're not scientists. They're Jason Colavitos. They're like people who like to throw tomatoes from the sidelines of science rather than actually like participate in it. So
Colavito, good God. That guy's a piece of work, man. Thank you, David. I appreciate the $2. I appreciate the you hanging out here, sir. We'll have to do here, have a chat here one of these days. I know that you've got some interesting stuff to talk about as well. The Colavito's like, you know, he's a professional skeptic. I don't even know how else you put it. That's like, that's how he makes his money, is being skeptical of things.
By writing books of why he's skeptical of things. And then,
and the occasional article and stuff. And it's like, it would be such a bad day for that. I mean, I see him like hammering at the UFO guys on Twitter. And it's like, I've always been skeptical of UFOs, but, when the federal government's coming out and saying that there's shit going on, it's like, maybe it's a bad time to be overly skeptical about it. Call me crazy. A lot of things. His attack on Hamlet's Mill was hilarious. He wrote this big to-do about how Hamlet's Mill was all due to one – misrepresents the work of one Iranian astronomer. I forget his name, a Muslim astronomer, and he – like tried to tie all these different astrologies and astronomies and all this stuff together. And Colavito was like, well, that's how come Hamlet's Mill, that's where all of these connections in Hamlet's Mill came from. And it's like, are you on fucking crack, dude? You didn't even read the goddamn thing.
I was literally about to say, this dude's a crackhead, like, for real.
and he'll argue about these things for a minute, but it doesn't take very long to push him into a corner and to watch him into the racism about Atlantis thing. I argued with him about, I said, you know, that's the whole idea that Ignatius Donnelly started Atlantis hunting in the modern era is ridiculous. He goes, oh no, modern day Atlantis hunting started during the Greek occupation of Egypt. Do you know what modern means, sir? Come on, man. If it's before Jesus, it's a good chance that it's probably not qualifying as modern. God, man. But, you know, guys can never admit that they're wrong. That's one of the big things.
I will give him credit, though. Assuming he did actually read Hamlet's Mill, that's an achievement, because it is a bloody slog to get through it. It is very difficult to read.
I read it like 20 years ago, and I want to go back to it because there was like, when me and Colavito were talking about it, I said that I don't like the book. I feel like wading through sewage and finding the occasional diamond, but there are some real fucking gems in there. And so like you say, it's so hard to read. It's written, it's almost written like to detour people from reading. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck up everything except the sentence structure.
Yeah. If anyone does want to get into it, there is an audiobook version now by Graham Dunlop from the Grime America podcast. He did a recording. You can get it on Audible now.
Oh, nice.
I definitely recommend that over reading it. Even though you will need to replay every section a couple of times to absorb it.
It's better than rereading it a couple of times.
Yeah.
But that book is, it does have some interesting bits in it. Like I said, there is some really tantalizing tidbits in there. And it's one that I'll probably do the audiobook thing. I would like to revisit it, but yeah, I'm not about to sit down and torture myself like that again. It's good though that there's this kind of work that was done. A lot of these books, even though they're not, they've got a lot of stuff that's like that. It's weird and wrong. Like I've got that Pale God Stone Faces, and it's clearly it's definitely not one that would get published today outside of some odd corners of the internet. There's a lot of Aryan First shit in there. And that makes it's a slog in and of itself for me, because it's just like, okay, come on, man. It's one thing to say, I think these people will hear. It's another thing when you start using his lines of evidence, superiority in for your, the book has lots of little mentions of tribes that you never hear anybody in the alternate history sphere talk about anymore, like at all. And that's one thing where I'll thumb through it and just glance over huge sections of babbling basically on her part, and then it'll be some really interesting stuff that I hadn't seen. And that does make these things interesting, you know, like research bias, as I'm sure you're very familiar with. But in the archaeological community, like the biggest issue with that, is that the more popular a site is, the more people show up and research that site, the more papers get written about that site. So you end up with Menkaure's pyramid having 1/1000th of the papers written about it, the Khufu's pyramid do, even though they're both fucking a stone's throw from each other.
Yeah.
And that is something that in the alternate history sphere, when something's interesting and to somebody in the 60s, and then nobody talks about it in the 70s and 80s, if it didn't make it into one of Graham Hancock's books, there's a good chance nobody's talking about it anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that people like Jason Colavito attack him for. Like, I wrote an essay in 2020 talking about Colavito and stuff. And he accuses Graham of rehashing old stories and posting them to make money, basically. He's grifting off of previous theories is what is basically what he's trying to say. And it's like, that's literally what you do, mate. It's just you're grifting off of debunking those things.
Yeah, and the way that those things play telephone amongst those groups of people, to the point where certain things, like when Graham Hancock was banned from filming at Serpent Mound, if you watch Ancient Apocalypse, he says, like, I was banned from Serpent Mound. And then his next sentence is, I was banned from filming there, I was still allowed to go there. So many people clipped that first thing out and sent it around. There are debunking videos of people calling Serpent Mound and being like, aha, here's proof that nobody.
Yeah. Those guys who drove up to the gate and asked the lady, oh, did you ban Graham Hancock? And he's like,
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, dude, you can't watch the next sentence, but it doesn't matter because the people, they spread it around. Right now, Flint's response to me says that I accused him of handling Native American bones that were in violation of NAGPRA. And I did. Dartmouth University did recently announce that they had Native American bones that are in violation of NAGPRA and that were used by teachers as aids in their class. That's kind of a big deal. And I say in the video, so either Flint or Flint maybe and one of his colleagues certainly had taught with these bones and that were in violation. And the whole point is, don't throw fucking accusations of racism from a house that's filled with actual racist bones, dude. Come on. But he's twisted that into, I'm lying about him actually touching Indigenous Americans' bones. I'm trying to fraudulently accuse him of a crime. And that, I get told that every day now in my comments. Somebody will show up, yeah, Indian, you're trying to claim that cow bones were Indian bones. You're a piece of shit. And it's like, fuck, whatever, dude. You're so stupid that you actually thought that a cow bone was a human femur. You probably should be in a different part of the internet, to be honest with you.
That's another aspect of this whole situation as well. Like, the people who like to present themselves as science communicators when they're just pseudo-skeptics, they rev up these army of like very low information internet retard, and then they just swarm you and like posting like ridiculous stuff that doesn't even matter or make sense. It's just I don't understand.
I don't get it. I don't understand why they want to make this such a war. It's to me that's such a weird, it's such a weird place to be. It's like they could easily play off the whole lost civilization angle and use this for funding, use this to make specials, use this to entice people into real archaeology, just like Sagan did with UFOs. They could do the exact fucking same, but and they would rather argue tooth and nail against guys like Hancock and everybody, but guys like Hancock especially. It's the bigger the target, the more popular they are, the more problem they consider the person, even though if everybody on the planet believed Hancock's underlying hypothesis, it wouldn't change the way things happen tomorrow. But there are some hypotheses out there that, you know, there are some guys that, man, if everybody believed what they said, we would be reigniting the gas chambers, but they don't ever talk about those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the way that these science communicators like Boslow and stuff carry on, it's almost like they're gearing up for another one of those, of like all the non-believers or the heretics. They might round them all up, but it's like the stuff they project like on social media, especially Boslow. If you scroll through his accounts, it's just like, please seek help, mate. Like the most ridiculous blue and on conspiracy theories are what he's posting every day on Twitter. And it's like, horseshoe theory is real. That's all I'll say about that.
Yes, horseshoe theory is very, very real. It is. When I saw, I'm sure you watch my stuff, so I'm sure you've seen the clip of that astronomer lady, which says the fucking, it's a
white. That's exactly the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say this.
Yeah, insidious plot to make white supremacy's rhetoric palpable to a general audience. It's like, what the fuck? That's what I'm doing, man. I thought I was just fascinated with big rocks. Fuck.
And why is she talking to Dr. Krupp about this? He doesn't give a shit about that. He's not into politics like that. He's not like he doesn't give two shits. He's there to study the stars. He's not interested in like these guys are pushing white supremacy. Why are you telling him?
Because because it came up and Krupp has you know, he was the first person to fire. He was one of the first two guys to fire back on the Orion-Giza correlation. Interesting fact. There's some evidence in that that's like they say that wasn't the time of the age of Leo. And when they published that, you could say that because the only people that would know that was wrong would be astrologers and who the fuck listens to them. But now I can just get on the computer and see that that's not true. And it's like, man, all the way back then, even Krupp, I like Krupp. I mean, fuck, I'm sitting right here, this damn book. I read this fucking thing. It's all the time. I've read this like three times now. It's a great, great book. But yeah, that stuff sucks. And there, like you say, there she is poisoning the well. The first time I brought that up, I called it a 10-year game of telephone. It's like Flint tells her, and then she tells Krupp, and then
she didn't just poison the well; she nuked the well. Like she just came out of nowhere with all this heinous shit that has nothing to do with the conversation.
Oh, that ridiculous book is, Skywatchers, Shamans, and Kings by E.C. Krupp. Sorry. Exactly. It was very politically motivated, and that's what really is sad about it. She was really cool when in the comments of the first video I made responding to her, she talked to me about it and stuff, but she did try to defend some of the supremacist angles, but I would point it out that there would be like Mayan supremacy and not white supremacy, and of course. And I said, you know, with the power dynamic difference, I didn't think that would bother you so much. I can smell which side of the fence you're on here, lady. And that was the end. That was the end of that. You can't, you know, white supremacy is bad. Mayan supremacy might not be such a bad thing in her mind. So I knew that picture and touch that button. But she was pretty reasonable. And again, it, as much as the politics influenced her take on it, the seed was planted by Flint. She didn't go get this idea on her own. She didn't watch Ancient Apocalypse and go, fuck, that's racist. She watched Ancient Apocalypse and goes, fuck, that's ridiculous. Then she starts doing research and she's like, oh, fuck, that's racist. Thanks to Flint. That's a big problem when, that's just outright spreading slanderous shit about somebody. I mean, you know, if you look up, if you hand links to people that you know that aren't into this shit already, you're like, hey, man, check out this Graham Hancock guy. And they go Google him and they're like, man, you know, I read down three hits and somebody was accusing him of being a racist or saying that his work was contaminated with racism. It's like, fuck, that is cancer. People are not going to click on that. So, yeah, it's a definitely a scorched earth tactic that's underhanded.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the main way they interact with people, underhanded ways. Like, because they know that deep down that their position is unreasonable.
Well, yeah. It's when and Flint made it very clear, like when he tries to compare Atlantis with the flat earth. It's like one of these is we can easily, clearly see. We have millions of people that have seen the round face of the earth when they flew across the country. So comparing that to Atlantis, to a lost civilization, I mean, that's not even logically, it's not even remotely the same. One of these is clearly falsifiable. One of them is not. So it makes all the time, I've been asking this question almost since I started, what kind of a person would even try to debunk something that's not falsifiable? What the fuck are you even on about?
Exactly.
Doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. It's
a wasted effort, seems. And no, sorry, guys. This isn't moonshine. I wish it was, but it's not. It's just water. Seriously, Mr. FBI agent. No. You can't make the liquors over here in the States. You can grow weed.
Oh, I actually heard something about that. So the Supreme Court overturned that, I think.
Whoa. Sure, I do need to widen.
Previously, you weren't allowed to own a distiller, but you're allowed to now. They overturned that because it was unconstitutional.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's
So get on it.
Yeah. Well, my great grandpa was a moonshiner back in the day, but I don't think his recipes are still around. Oh, no, that's we've got quite a few of these here comments. Let's see. Didn't the same happen to Galileo when he said that we were in a heliocentric orbit? Yeah, that's pretty accurate. He definitely fell into the same kind of shit where he was demonized and called all kinds of names for positing science. It's not right. But that was, to be fair, that was religion. Before Darwin, religion really had such a stranglehold on science, it seems, that it was it's why gradualism became such a thing for so long, because the catastrophism that was expected to bear out the Bible, you got to prove the Bible's real. So there was a lot of catastrophic ideas in the early days of science that once evolution came into being, and geology had already chipped away at that some, it got a lot more of the gradualism thing, but then they do the exact opposite. It's like you can't, yeah. Eventually we got punctuated equilibrium, as they call it, right? Uniformitarianism was gradualism and catastrophe. I think gradualism and uniformitarianism were pretty intertwined. That it was basically the idea that this was just a steady thing. And to me, that's just so dumb, because it's like a kid could see how ridiculous that is. It's like sometimes water can deposit dirt here slowly, or I can go drop a big shovel full of dirt there too. Well, this isn't complicated, but it took until the damn KT impact before science was like, okay, fine.
Yeah. And even before that, like with it took the Barringer crater for them to accept impact impact science. If it weren't for Barringer crater, we might not even know about the KT boundary, because that's the whole foundation of study on impacts came from Barringer Crater, and then they kind of extrapolated from there.
Yeah, it was pretty funny how all that played out, where I mean, they can look at the moon and see it's covered. It's pockmarked. And we're not that far away. You know that we get visited. We've seen meteors all the times. And so it's the Tunguska event was a thing. It's just like, it's just so weird that it seemed like they use that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. They use that way too much. It's like, that's an extraordinary claim because it bucks our existing paradigm. It's like, no, that's not an extraordinary claim. It's just a fucking different claim.
And they have to misrepresent the context in which that was said in order to use it as a standard of evidence that needs to be overcome, because that's not what Sagan meant it as.
No, it's not. But as we were just discussing, people, the whole clipping things out of context is very normal now. I mean, shit, during the debate when Graham Hancock, they're discussing underwater archaeology. And Hancock says they've only looked in 5% of the places. And Joe says, yeah, but isn't it fair to say that they haven't found anything in the places they have looked? And Graham says, yeah, there's no evidence in the places that they've looked. But they're talking about underwater archaeology. It's very clear if you listen to the debate. But Flint and all of his buddies are running around holding that up. Graham said there's no evidence for Atlantis, period. Full stop. He's talking about specifically underwater archaeology, you dumb fucks. But it doesn't matter because it's a soundbite world now, right? Like when I said earlier, I am stoned. Well, that's probably going to end up as a soundbite in somebody's video.
So. Yeah.
He's just a
fucking as an archaeologist, I did find some of Flint's points on that compelling. So when he said that there's no evidence of agriculture in the pollen cores and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, that's a good argument. That doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah,
because because not only does there's obviously pollen that doesn't make it into the cores, but also there are events that cause discontinuities in those cores. So If a big flood comes in and washes away the top section of that core, then the deposition on the next layer, there's a 1,000-year jump between not very far in the layer. So, and obviously you can detect that with dating. You can say, well, here's a date here and here's a date here, and there's 1,000 years difference. So there's obviously some sort of discontinuity there, but we're talking about a fucking cataclysm. Like the fact that there's minimal evidence to be found is a miracle, because there should be no evidence. Like, it's washed away, dude.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny when they talk about that, like, where are the material remains and stuff, and it's like, man, you know, try finding, go to your local pawn shops, get on Craigslist, do whatever you can, and try finding a copy of a video game that they only made a couple thousand of in the 80s. Good fucking luck, man. And these were mass-produced, and it was only 40 years ago. But people were actively looking for them, and because people are actively looking for them, you won't find them. And so, I mean, if you really get like lost high technology civilization, if they had fucking laser guns and crystals that would heal your butthole, that stuff is things that people would be gathering up when that technology was no longer being produced. It would still be saved, and it would be revered, and it would be collected and eventually used up. So it's, and I don't think that that's a case. I don't think believe in ancient high tech. I'm just running with it to the nth degree that their hypotheses about this stuff is really, the way that they look at this stuff is really just out there. It doesn't make much sense. They know we don't have evidence for a lot of things in the record that they believe happened much, much more recently. So it just seems weird. But
I was thinking about this on the car up here to do this interview, actually. And, well, I'll start it out by saying that one thing that Flint said, I think when he was comparing the analogy earlier with the flat earth thing, I think he mentioned that there's not a single archaeologist in the world who subscribes to the idea of an advanced lost civilization, rah, rah, rah. Well, he's a fucking liar. Because there's plenty do. I'm an archaeologist. I subscribe to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the way that Graham, not all the fantastical stuff that Graham says, but there was an advanced civilization, and there was like a it wasn't like global in the way that we are today, but it was global. And so we only have one anti-Kythera mechanism, right? And before that, we had no idea what those people were capable of, that level of technology, right? So if we today, if we go to the most advanced technology that we have, like brand new quantum mechanics stuff, like at a university where there's one in the world, that's not going to manifest in the archaeological record. Like the chances of that surviving, and even, I mean, obviously it's a little different because there's 1,000 universities in the world, but something like a scanning electron microscope, there's hundreds of them around, but they probably still wouldn't make it into the archaeological record for various reasons, because people would come through and salvage it. And for one thing, that's a major aspect that no one talks about in archaeology, is if something's precious, it's made of precious metals, for example, if there was wiring in the Great Pyramid, it's not going to be there today, is it? Because they've come in. There's been generations of people who have come in and salvaged it.
Yep. That's
so it's only the things that are buried or entombed by stuff like a cataclysm that survived in the archaeological record.
And to take that even another step, the anti-Kythera mechanism, when it was found, was a block of rust. They weren't really sure what it was until they put it under some x-rays. Well, had the guy that found that thing been able to identify it immediately as what it was, there's a really good chance that that would have ended up being sold before it ever got to any university.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's lost that shit right out of the record. And especially with how unique it is. That's the kind of stuff that the more unique something is, the higher the price tag gets. And so I have, I've talked about it before, but I have a hard time with thinking that, especially with Egypt. When we first went to Egypt, by we, I mean European people, when Napoleon first showed up in Egypt, the looting was fucking insane. I mean, that's why there's so many freaking vases that Matt Bell and a bunch of other people have their hands on now, because they were just handed out like toffee there for a minute. Here you go, buddy.
Yep.
Have a vase. Have an artifact that nobody really cares about. The idea that, like, I don't believe the Dendera light was a thing, but if they opened that temple up and they found in Hathor, they found an actual working Dendera, or even just scraps of a Dendera light, that thing would have been sold long before it ended up in a museum. It would have ended up in some dude's private collection. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, one generation later, they die off and their grandson goes and sells it on eBay or whatever. It's like, man, they just found that at the beginning of this year, they recovered that the Aztec codices that were hundreds of years they've been in private hands. And they just pop up out of nowhere. People hold on to these things for generations. And so it's not unthinkable. As a matter of fact, to me, it would be kind of naive to say that we have everything major in the record.
The only reason we have the Antikythera mechanism is because it was from a shipwreck. It would have been resmelted into weapons during some war. Like
all the iron that the Romans used to build their shit with, is almost all of it's missing, because just what you're saying, it's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Time dilation machine. Are we getting all Doctor Who over here with this stuff?
Just what I said earlier about how I believe in the advanced civilization. I'm not saying it's like Atlantis or anything, but maybe, like Graham says, 18th century technology, they could navigate the oceans, they can move heavy stuff. Like I am intrigued by some of the evidence from Egypt, like of sonic technology, maybe. Like I don't buy that, I'm not all in on that, but I think it's worth exploring.
Things like that I tend to be more skeptical of, but I try to be real clear about this. guys like Ben, for example, Ben Van Kirkwick from Uncharted X, I don't think that those vases are a product of high technology. However, I do think that his Tale of Two Industries is pretty accurate as far as we did have higher level shit coming out of there before than we did later. And I also think that his research has pushed the dating of the lathe in Egypt back by a couple, 3,000 years, which in and of itself makes it valuable. And he did this on his own, right? And it flew right in the face of Egyptology. So in my opinion, the squelching of the amateur that's really into this stuff, if the passionate amateur is trying hard and actually doing a good job with their data and not misrepresenting it, not lying, not coming out and bullshitting their way through it, man, by just stifling them, they're really doing science a disservice. They're not just getting rid of hypotheses that are bad. They're getting rid of data that is potentially really good. And so, yeah, it's kind of fucked in my opinion. But again, these guys they're angry at each other and they want to fight. So,
yeah. And just to bring it back to something you just said, you started by saying that you don't buy the whole high technology thing, but then you said it in the next sentence. They had the high technology. They had the lathe. That is much more advanced than we said they are.
Yeah, exactly. So
if we know they had that the evidence is right there written into the rock that they had that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously when people say, oh, it's an advanced society, advanced technology, they're picturing like laser cut CNC machines cutting all the rocks and stuff. But that's nobody's saying that. Like, there's maybe one guy on Twitter who's saying that, but like none of the scientists are saying that. Graham's not saying that. Like, and so I think we need to kind of rethink the terminology we use, because if they had the lathe 2,000 years before they said they had it, then that's high technology.
It's like I said at the end of the video, it's not the ancient high technology Ben's looking for, you know,
yeah.
To paraphrase Obi-Wan, but it is ancient high technology. And it's really sad that it gets rejected. His work gets rejected because they consider him a tainted source, something that I'm sure you're extremely familiar with. And it's really too bad because, you know, Ben puts a lot of energy into it. He's out there doing a lot of research. He's a lot of work. And, in my opinion, there's places where I would find evidence against his hypothesis pretty overwhelming at certain places. However, he keeps working at it and he keeps doing it. And you know what? I'm not saying Ben's right. Again, I have my opinion on that, but J. Harlan Bretz was in the same fucking boat Ben was 100 years ago, where everybody looked at him and said, man, don't you find this overwhelmingly against your hypothesis? And he's like, fuck you, more data. And eventually he was panned out to be right. So I think discouraging these guys is really, really a bad idea. They should be embraced by science. Even if they disagree with them, they should embrace and help them do their research, run through it. Then you can either prove it, disprove it, or whatever. But they're so worried about legitimizing it. But we can't legitimize these people. Okay, well, you just go ahead and let us have our little vacuum and you have your little thing, and then come crying when Graham Hancock, Ancient Apocalypse, just destroys the bones of the Cave of Naledi or whatever, right? And that's the closest thing that archaeology has to something on Netflix that could even grab Graham's coattails. And it's not even close. It's like, this is you guys are losing the war of PR and you don't give a fuck.
And the thing is, the same people who criticize Graham, they also criticize Lee Berger. They shat all over that show, despite that show doing the most for archaeology that's basically ever been done in the last 20 years in terms of public outreach and like promotion. Yet they choose to shit on it.
The closest I've said before that Lee Berger is the closest that archaeology has to a Carl Sagan right now. It's he's not quite a Sagan, but he's trying. He recognizes that PR matters. He recognizes that if you don't leave some mystery on the bone, archaeology is boring and stuffy and not fun anymore.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, in a world full of CRM bums over here in the States, I'm sure you know what the cultural resource management is over here in the States. Like most of the archaeologists, that's what they do.
Yeah, same here. You guys are actually only starting to catch up to how we are over here.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Most archaeologists over here are private sector cultural resource people.
Yeah, that's it's not a very glamorous job. It's kind of a shitty job, to be honest with you. I would rather be an electrician. I've been rushed off of jobs as an electrician. You hurry the fuck up and get done, but imagine hurry the fuck up and dig that hole, tell me there's nothing in it and get done. God damn it. What am I doing with my life? Pick up that rock and put it back. Have a good day. Fuck this.
Something you said earlier with that GeoGirl stuff. Part of that comes from the overt politicization of science today, but also another component of that is all throughout most of the history of science, scientists have, well, when it's not in their lane, it's not in their wheelhouse, they'll default to the experts in that field. And that's basically what GeoGirl was doing with Flint when he came out and said, oh, this is promoting white supremacy and all this stuff. So she's just defaulting to this other person because that's not her area of expertise. So that's a major problem in the modern culture of science, because you've got an entire faction devoted to making sure that sort of stuff isn't reliable anymore. So rather than just relying on another scientist having done their due diligence, they can't do that because of how politicized everything is. So if someone's coming out and using underhanded tactics to try and debunk something, and then this next guy just comes along and cites them and says, oh, yeah, well, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. That's how these things happen. That's how you get GeoGirl talking about white supremacy to Edward Krupp on a podcast. Like,
yeah, it's crazy how it ends up like that. It's sad though. I was frustrated with politics when I stuck my nose into this because I thought for sure, you know, my first video is just debunking Mini Minuteman on his stuff on Ancient Apocalypse and some Stefan Milo in there too. And I thought for sure, you know, this is just science and big rocks and fucking lost civilization. No, seeing how heavily entrenched politics is into this is actually kind of like really irritating to me because, I don't know. I miss the 90s, man. When I was a teenager, a young adult, you were the people that were into politics and talked about it all the time were like the people that are into computer science and talk about it all the time. Now just go fuck off, go somewhere else, man. Nobody wants to talk to you. Nobody wants to hear it. But now it's like all everybody. And I ask them all the time, if anybody in my real life gets too political with me, I just ask them, can you name like two of the local politicians, even know any of the local politicians? Because I usually don't. And that's really pretty telling in my opinion. It's like, you're just a fucking sheep. You don't even know what's going on a local level. You just know what somebody else said on social media that you didn't bother to look up, but you're angry because you were told to be a fuck. Yeah, I remember thinking the internet was going to make the world better, but I'm firmly against that thinking now. What do you do?
Yeah, just what you said. Regarding the difference in approach between the 90s and today, like there's a Dutch TV interview from 1997, I reckon. I'm trying to think of the name. It's something like A Happy Accident, and it's got Stephen Jay Gould and Freeman Dyson and all of these greats from their own fields, and this guy's invited them to come and chat for 8 hours, basically. It's the most amazing thing that I've ever seen. Anyone out there, you have to go and watch it because that sort of discourse doesn't exist anymore. Like, you can tell just by the way these guys are talking that they're incredible people, like very, very, very intelligent, like leaders in their field. And I look at people who are the supposed leaders in their field today, and they can't even hold a candle to these people. And I think that's another reason that science is going downhill. We can get into the whole universities becoming factory farms to pump out degrees. They've lowered the requirements for getting a degree so far from where they were. Like a recently qualified scientist today isn't even equivalent to a high school, whatever it's called over there, to a high school student back then. Like the level of education is so different between back then and today.
Yeah, it's they definitely. I've seen a lot of studies about that. My buddy Dr. Steve J. He's here. Dr. Steve Mark Young here is a scientist. So. He won't be unclogging your toilet. And so, yeah. Anyway, Dr. Steve's one of my, he's one of my fans. He loves to hate on me. it's kind of funny when you look at that, the way that, well, like to keep going back to Brett's, one of the things that he taught his students and he taught his understudies was, when somebody would come to Brett's and say, hey, I'm going to be studying this. What should I read? He'd say nothing. And I, huh? Well, you know how to do geology, right? Well, don't you just come back, and then they would do their work in the field and write their papers. And then he'd say, okay, if you want some extra credit, you can go read what the people before you wrote about that region. And he did this specifically to keep them from leaning on the authority of the people that came before them and having it fuck up their view of what they were looking at. And geology kept that for a while. There's still some geologists that teach this. And that's kind of a big deal when you think about it. That whole, this isn't, fuck, I want nothing to do with the consensus. If we're all doing the consensus, why do we need any of us? Right? we already know.
And that's why two geologists could look at the same features in the scablands and come up with different things, because it's literature versus actual ability to decode these things. If you understand the scale invariant properties of geology, you can look at any feature and say how it was formed. Yet these people today rely on literature that said, oh, well, actually there's 70 or 80 different floods that is actually physically impossible, but we'll still say they are because of these layers in Burlingame Gulch. Like the entire context of the Scablands versus one site where there's stratigraphy that doesn't make sense in that model. And then they rework the model to suit that one little site with that stratigraphy. And suddenly Brett's flood becomes 70 or 80 different floods.
Yep. I think Brett's signed off on like 6 by the end of it. He was accepting of that. But that's, you know, something that's funny to me here as a local, you know, the Grand Coulee Dam, if you know what that is, it changed the landscape here in the channeled scablands. When Brett's went back in the 50s after the dam was up, he complained that all of his coulees were gone because they'd been inundated by water, right? But you go there and it's got this big laser light show every night of the year. You go down there and sit at that thing. I think it's 9 o'clock at night, and they start a laser light show with audio that comes out of the visitor center at the dam. And it talks about the history of the channeled scablands at the beginning of it, and it talks about multiple floods with one big one that really changed the landscape. And that's one thing that I think that the people that are opposed to the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis don't pay attention to much. And I think that they probably wrote the laser light show before the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis was a thing, or Hoops would have gave them a phone call, or Boslow would have told them they need to fix that. But the way that it is, it just very clearly leaves room for like something way bigger than the Montana, the Missoula, Glacial Lake Missoula breaching and flooding over and over. So that's a pretty interesting to me that when you step outside of the debunker sphere, you start to find all of these little bits of evidence that are, that it's not nearly as cut and dry as the Boswells of the world would like you to believe.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot, even the geologists don't feel that way.
Yeah, and so what I was saying earlier about those two tiers, like the army of the undead and versus the commanders. So there's probably another layer in there that I'd call like the generals or the lieutenants or something. And like there's a few of those who are like, one's an archaeologist and he's posting about how, well, actually Brett's flood was actually 70 or 80. And then you just send him the video to look at the evidence. Just look. Use your eyes.
Yeah, it's not. Like I mentioned earlier, there's a paper that's trying to discuss the formation of the Moses Coulee, and it doesn't work with the current flood model that they have from Glacial Lake Missoula. So they're having to look for other ways. And the bottom line is, I don't know if you follow Nick Zenter at all. He's a local that talks about that shit a lot, right? And the bottom line is, if you watch him, he's a perfect example of why. Now, there are people in geology that are gatekeepers, but it seems to be the culture of geology is nothing like the culture of archaeology. And that's like a very clear example. He's a successful YouTuber geologist, and he never says bad things about anyone. But you will not find a successful YouTuber archaeologist. They cap out at around 20,000 subscribers if they don't throw rocks at Hancock. That's just sad reality of it.
Looks like Dr. Steve is another one of those like random internet retards who just post random shit on someone's
thread. Yeah.
What's this guy talking about?
Yeah. Well, those multiple floods in the last 500 years, you know, there was the great
flood
in Illinois. Yeah.
Flood stories, given that human populations tend to live near bodies of water. Dickhead. Like, look, read a book. Look at the literature.
It's not that complicated to the thing. This is a perfect example. He's like basically coming here to prove what we're talking about. It's like there is a scientific debate between scientists, but because Boslow, Hoops, and a few others have made it look like it's real scientists versus fake scientists, you get these kind of boneheads that just come in here. What literature? Go ahead, Mark. Tell him what literature he needs to read, because I think he can.
J. Harlan Bretz, Jerome Lessman, what's his name? Bruce Bjornstad, any of the videos on YouTube where these scientists making the videos. They show you the fucking calculations that they use to determine how deep and fast the water was going based on the geomorphology of the landscape. Like it's a well established fucking science, mate.
Yeah, but no, there's literature on the flat Earth theory. What's the point? See, you didn't even finish, and he's already shifting the goalposts.
Citation, please.
What the fuck? I mean, should you do like Hoops and just send him your own links? Here's papers that I posted, that I wrote. I mean, fucking.
Well, that's a good point, actually. Go to Wikipedia and see what Wikipedia says about it, Steve. Even they fucking admit it.
It's so funny. It's like we don't know for sure. Geologists are very clear that area, we don't have it pinned down. They have some of it. There's no question that Glacial Lake Missoula flooded that region. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if it knocked off a good chunk of the topsoil and just laid that sucker bare for the big one that came through. But even the geologists agree that a fucking big one came through there. Then that one, well, if you got a bunch of... If the same lake fills over and over and over again, you should have pretty similar floods. But the big one, that probably came from something else. You know, call me crazy. I'm not a scientist, but it seems to me that if this tap only gives you 20 feet of water per second and you needed 100 feet of water per second, it didn't come from that tap.
It's more like if these giant current ripples are 20 feet apart and 5 meters high, you can calculate the flow that came through there, mate.
That's simple.
Like, it's simple. The most simple aspects of geology that are lost on today's people. Like you were saying earlier, they don't teach people how to be geologists anymore. They teach them how to be people who read literature and regurgitate.
Yeah, that's really sad. It's kind of the end of science if that shit keeps going. It's, you know, that's like you were saying earlier, the dog has always been a part of it. But if we get to a point where, well, we see this happen with, God, I hate to even open the whole can of worms, but you see it happen recently with the whole pandemic thing, where I said really quickly when they first started locking things down and it became quite obviously a political talking point on social media, there were two clear sides and it was based on politics. I predicted right then and there that we were going to be sitting in our homes for a long fucking time, because these ain't neither side going to ever back down from the other one. Doesn't matter what the data says, we've got emotional attachment now. And that's kind of, well, look at Dr. Steve here. They teach you how to review and research. Where's your published research? Mark Young has published papers on the fucking subject, Steve. Mark himself, the guy you're talking, you're looking at on the screen, has published papers on this, you fucking noodle newt. Jesus Christ.
If he knew how to Google, he wouldn't be here, would he?
No, if he, you know, he's one of the guys who likes to talk shit about me. I think he was here before Flint made a video about me, so he might be one of my OG haters.
A commission.
I haven't shut him down yet like a couple of my OG haters. They took off when Dr. Miano's response video. Fucking. Do you got Google, Steve? Go click the Google button. His name is on the screen. It's Mark Young. You see that right there? No K? You see that? You see it on the screen? It's a fucking Christ, man. Anyway, the whole funny thing is, okay, say for instance that they do more research and they come up with, they find out that there was no Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, and they, all this stuff is all just hooey. It takes research to get there, man. Okay. This isn't like people are saying that we think that Jesus came down and melted the ice. This isn't some insane, unfalsifiable crap. Oh, he's waiting. Okay. Well, you're going to be waiting.
I just told you, mate, airbursts and cratering impacts. And I have two under review at Nature Scientific Reports.
Look, he said it again. So go ahead, Steve. You've got to take over the stream now for a few minutes. I hope you feel satisfied with yourself. Jesus Christ. But yeah, it's when they're looking for like in the old days of early days of pharmaceuticals, and they would just be looking for something that would thin blood, and so they would just go down and test all these different things. All the failed ones were still advances in science. Okay, a failed hypothesis is still a gain for scientific knowledge. So. Mm-hmm. Opposing a hypothesis out of hand without calling for data, with these personal attacks like we're seeing from Steve here. Oh, this is flat earth shit. Oh, do you believe in aliens too? It's like this is we ain't gonna get anywhere ever. They keep this shit up, we'll never get anywhere.
and so he just moves the goalpost from peer-reviewed journal to where is it supported in the scientific community.
Oh, now, and so
now it needs widespread support. It's not just a couple of peer reviews. It has to be mainstream paradigm.
What scientific laws have you wrote, Mark?
Yeah.
Where's Mark's? It's just, yeah, these guys are, this is what they do. This is what they do. They can't be wrong, because in his mind, you and me are the same. We're both fake. You're not a real scientist, according to his brains, right? So he can't be wrong. There's no fucking way, because in his head, we're the dumb ones and he's smart. So when he gets proven to be dumb, those emotions, the shit that he should have seen a therapist for, they come screaming out, and we get to see, you need support from scholars who have replicated the hypothesis. Okay, Steve, so how many times would you like to see this replicated? Now, what exactly do you want, Steve? Fucking Christ. How to be a YT troll. Yeah, that's exactly it. All right. Yes. It's too bad, because this is a small little example of what happens all across social media. I mean, I deal with a small little section with my 42,000 subscribers or whatever. A guy like Graham Hancock, I would be hard pressed to open my fucking inbox if I was that guy. I mean, it's like, Jesus Christ, man. How many of these guys do I gotta wait before I get to one that's not just "fuck you, you idiot."
Yep, and then they'll look at things like the Sun et al. Data manipulation paper and say, "Oh, well, it was published in a peer-reviewed journal and it's widely accepted by science." Yet, so obviously that means it's true. So,
always. Like I said, they won't ever be wrong. That's why you can pin them down on things and prove them wrong, and they'll just move to something else, because there's admitting that they were wrong to somebody like us is just it's beyond the pale. It can't be done. And that's
the whole crux of the argument against the Andreas stuff comes down to exactly what I've been talking about. So rather than geologists looking at something and thinking about how it formed, they look at the literature and say, this isn't consistent with the literature, therefore it's not an impact proxy. The problem is the entire field of impact science has been built on large cratering impacts. So when they're saying that the Young-Andreas impact proxies aren't recognized impact proxies, what they're saying is the Young-Andreas impact proxy didn't come from a large cratering impact. That's all they're saying. That's all they can say. But if you look at the fucking evidence itself, you can see that it formed at temperatures over 3,000 degrees. There's nothing else that can form those temperatures naturally.
So
the idea is that it's a one-man army. Alan West has manufactured all of this data and he's just publishing it. Paper I read earlier that just came out a couple of days ago by Christian Kerbal, that's the entire thesis of his argument, is that this stuff, there's people coming in from other fields and treading on our precious territory and saying that these things are from an impact when we don't have any precedent for them. No shit, you don't. We only found out about Airbus about a couple of decades ago. We only saw one 10 years ago, years ago.
Yeah.
That's the first one we saw. You can't weigh like the entire foundational literature of an entire field against like a couple of papers, because you're always going to come out saying that those new papers are wrong. But that's not the case.
Yeah, it's kind of there's a lot of smoke and mirrors with this stuff that they do criticize the Young-Andreas impact hypothesis papers with. And if it was like if they would respond above the board, if they would keep it to the data, it would actually be like some pretty interesting reading for a dork like myself. But instead, it's just like for a guy who's, I throw a lot of rocks at archaeologists, and it feels like I'm reading drama sometimes reading this stuff. It's just like, this is a fucking soap opera, you guys. Jesus Christ. And it's not to talk bad about the Comet Research Group. It's just that it's become a fight. It's become like an entrenched war. And it, like I said a number of times now, when the data isn't part of the equation, really, it doesn't, what does the rest of this even matter? You know, we can argue until you're blue in the face about, well, I think that floods myths might have blah, 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 but it's like, the fucking data, man. Well, that was gone two fucking weeks ago. We're just arguing about who sucks the hardest now.
You're right. It really is a war, because there's propaganda, that's obvious propaganda that's put out against this stuff. And it's not like, let's use Ukraine for example. So, rather than come to the table, discuss the ideas, discuss a plan, they're just going to say, no, we're not talking. We're just going to fight until one person loses. And that's essentially what the impact mafia are doing with the Young-Andreas stuff. They don't want to address the evidence. They don't want to have a conversation. They don't want to sit across from the CRG and hash it out. They're not interested in that. They're interested in pushing a narrative.
Yeah, it does seem pretty clear that that's what's happening.
And it's bad, because it leaves room for all sorts of conspiracy theories. Like, why are they doing this? Like, what are they protecting? What don't they want people to know?
Well, that's exactly it.
It could be nothing. It could be nothing. But they could have identified something that's going to wipe us out in 20 years. They don't want us to research the Young Dryas because it'll tell us that we're going to die soon. Or if, like, I don't know if you've seen Ben's stuff on the Edgar Cayce and Atlantis and all that stuff, but
some of it, yeah.
I think there is a world where they found Atlantis and they're hiding it. But I don't know if it's this world, but like that could explain why they don't want us to know about the Younger Dryas stuff. Why they're suppressing it so much. I'm not saying that's what I think. I'm just spitballing, but like that's the kind of thing that this behavior opens. Like people come in and say, why? It's so unreasonable. Anyone can see that it has legitimacy, whether it's true or not. It has legitimacy. It's a real fucking proposal. It's a scientific hypothesis. Yeah, you should address it as a scientific hypothesis, not as fucking pseudoscience.
Exactly. And the way that they do it, like you say, like we talk about the PR thing. Like I've said before, that the 20-year pyramid construction timeline, when mainstream Egyptology or archaeology says it took 20 to 30 years to build the Great Pyramid, I've said a number of times that is like the gateway drug to people questioning that whole narrative, because they anybody who's worked with their hands at all looks at it as like, are you on fucking crack, dude? No, you can get 20 meth heads and they ain't fucking doing it in half that. No. But it's the narrative, and because of that, people end up, well, what are they hiding? Why are they lying to us about this? And it's like we've reached a point where they are on their back heel trying to explain these 20-year things, but they still won't let go of it. There's certain Egyptology, it seems like, is so integral to the identity of archaeology that there's just parts of it they refuse to abandon regardless of the data.
Absolutely. And that just plays into the whole thing I was just talking about. Like, why? What are you trying to hide? Why can't you just be honest?
Yep. And see, and here we have Steve. Yes, because 20,000 people can't build a pyramid over 20 years. Yeah, well, as a guy who worked construction for decades, Steve, I can tell you that if you tried to have anybody bid out a job that was going to take less than 50 years on that thing, even today, they would be laughing at you. They're building a fucking freeway, a new freeway here in Spokane. It's been under construction for well over 10 years, and it ain't even close to halfway done. And it ain't going to have remotely the mass of that pyramid day when it's all said. It's just an idea. People say that this, it has to fit their little narrative. And again, when the carbon dating says that it, 200 and some odd years earlier, it stands to reason that it was a multi-generational project. That's not a crazy idea, but because it doesn't agree with what they already believe, they'll reject it out of hand. And that's, yes, working construction does make me an expert on pyramid construction. Steve, have you even built a fucking barbecue pit in your backyard, or did you pay somebody else to change your oil? All right, fuck off. Run along, little man. Guys like you, I laugh at you. You're one of those professionals that needs somebody else to fucking do basic shit for him.
Just to Nick O'Hara in the chat, earlier I mentioned that I do support the idea of a comparatively advanced society, pre-Younger Dryas, global in nature. I think the identical stonework from all over the world, like, that predates the people, like, even the people there say that they didn't do it. Like, that's just too much for me to say that's a coincidence.
Yeah. That's...
Like, that to me, that's the most compelling line of evidence. It's written into the stone. Yeah, you can fill in the gaps on how they got there, how they traveled the world to do those, like where they learned to do it. You can fill in those gaps. I don't care, but they're the same. That was made by the same culture.
It always comes back to it. See hyperdiffusion. Oh my God. If we should get a bingo card of all the Wikipedia pages, Hoops edits, and every time Steve says one of them, we'll put a little card there and see if I can tell long it takes before he's told us to look up all the Hoops pages. Jesus Christ.
If we were anything like our detractors, we would have blocked this fucking retard like weeks and weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Leave him there to continuously engage in bad faith arguments. Like,
yep. I only block the guys that like start going down the whole racism thing, and that's just because for obvious reasons. You know, you'll get YouTube silenced comments on my Atlantis Hunting is Racist, Not Racist video because of people arguing in there. I had no control over it. I just woke up one day and the fucking comments were shut off on us. Sorry, guys. But YouTube's crazy like that. They filter, they filter all kinds of shit. I get every video nowadays, I get somebody yelling at me that I've been removing their comments. It's like, man, I don't want to tell you. Fucking YouTube yanks shit that I got no control over. Hypothesis, Steve is Hoops. Yes, so that might be very...
Well, I was thinking about that. Who is this guy? Like, why is he here? But just to respond to Usually Right there, well, you're attacking him, Mark. Maybe don't do that. If someone comes up to you and punches you in the face and then you push them away, are you attacking them or are they attacking you? Honest question.
It's they have a set of double standards. It's pretty clear from the way Flint complained about me harassing him, but it's like, okay, Flint's blocked me and I blocked him and I don't go to his shit. I talk shit about his stuff specifically as it pertains to this whole sphere, including calling him out for lying. But Graham Hancock has people like Flint that follow him just to hate on him. If you go get on Facebook and look up Graham Hancock and join the first groups you find and look at the admins and see what they post. These are honeypots. They open these pages just so they got people to yell at. Graham Hancock, if anybody's being harassed, it would definitely be Hancock by the very people crying that I'm harassing them. And that's my point here in bringing it up. It's a double standard thing. These guys, it's not okay to treat them the way that they treat us because we're pseudoscientists. We're charlatans, but they're warriors for truth and justice. So how dare they be treated like a regular old person? It's fucking gross, man. Sorry. I could go off on that shit for a while. It pisses me off.
Yeah. And on the one hand, they want to say, oh, these guys are harassing us and attacking us. Yet, on the other hand, people like Carl Fagans and John Hoops, they literally run groups on Facebook. One's called the Wall of Fraudulent Archaeology, Wall of Shame. And in that, they just post whatever's in the news from the fringe, and they all like circle jerk, oh, what an idiot, blah, 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 blah. And then like some of the stuff that I've done has ended up on there, and people from my own fucking department, like another PhD student was on there talking shit about me. It's like, well, this isn't healthy. No. And it's a fucking double standard. It's hypocritical, like
big time hypocritical. And they would throw a fit about it the whole time too.
Yeah.
No, Sagan was gone before YouTube was around. But yeah, it's extremely hypocritical, and it's frustrating because they, by doing it like this, they end up putting in a spot where it's like Flint's got me accused of harassing him at this point. So these guys are going around harassing guys like Graham and whatnot, you guys at the Comet Research Group. And, anybody that punches back gets called out for harassment. It's like, well, dude, it's quite the cute little way that they've got it all organized, but it's the reality of it is that they're treating us far worse than we treat them. Go to Reddit even and go to the archaeology page r/archaeology and type in Graham Hancock and try to post it. They'll come up, we don't fucking allow pseudoscience in here. It's a bot will response, right? Automated refilter. But go to the Graham Hancock subreddit, and about 60, 70, 80% of the people there are there to talk shit about Graham Hancock. It's like it's just as funny. It's like this weird, like I was saying to you before the chat, it's like if these guys were all Call of Duty fans and they were all going around to yell at all the guys that play Halo on the Halo forums, the whole world would look at them and be like, man, you guys are fucking crazy. But they just say, oh, well, those Call of Duty fans are racists, and now they feel at least they're justified in their own head. And it's just gross. They're acting in a way that's I have a friend of mine that when I first started doing these videos, he was laughing at me a lot. He's really skeptical about this stuff. Eventually you're going to need evidence, he tells me all the time. Eventually you guys are going to need evidence. But when I just showed him some screenshots of the way that archaeologists act on Twitter, he's like, oh, I see why you make the videos you do. You have plenty to work with there, don't you? Yeah, fucking fodder for days, man. I don't need to ever talk about Atlantis. I can just talk about these guys. And all day long, they're making asses of themselves, very unscientific. And big one there. Acting unscientific makes it easy to prove.
Well, people like Mark Boslow, he's retired now, and he literally spends his entire waking day posting on social media, reading through our papers, drafting posts for PubPeer. His entire existence is devoted to harassment, literally. Yeah. It's not, it goes well beyond like auditing scientific integrity. Like, if you saw some of the stuff that he posts, even on PubPeer, it's supposed to be an impartial platform where people can raise issues with papers. If you go see some of his fucking posts on there, you wouldn't believe some of the things that he says. It's just completely fucking dumb.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I think that's one of the things that social media has hurt with scientists with a lot, is that it was easier to see them as impartial, you know, beacons of fact dispensing fountains, you know. But now it's like, you see them with all of their ass hanging out. They get angry about stupid shit. They have their political hot takes that are fucking dumb as a box of rocks. And just all kinds of shit. It's just like, it doesn't, you know, like we said before, it basically destroys your credibility. It destroys my faith in these guys. It's like, it gets to a point where you can't trust them. And that's where, like we saw in the debate, when you can't trust these guys, nobody expects that. Nobody expects a scientist to come and fucking lie to your face. But that's become a thing now. And it's, I don't even know where else to put it. It's,
yeah.
I don't think Boswell's mad that it wasn't his discovery. I think Boswell's just mad because he thinks it's quote unquote creationism.
So I saw a comment there. Where is it? Damn. I don't know where it went. Anyway, sorry.
Well, it's fine. I love this. Steve is asking how I want to evaluate scientific research when they don't work in that field. And I'm not evaluating the research. I'm evaluating the people and their actions on social media. But did you not just evaluate my take on construction when you've never done anything, Steve? I think you're a hypocrite, sir. I think you're a hypocrite.
That's another feature of these guys, confession through projection. Like, they want to say, oh, you're committing this fallacy. Literally, they've never not committed a fallacy. Anyway, I found this comment. I've heard the argument that all of the possible impact indicators could also be evidence of a solar outburst. If the idea is like a solar outburst, of the Robert Schock variety, yeah, could be. The problem is, it's a theoretical thing. We've never observed anything close. We don't even know if it's possible. Yet there are outbursts literally every day on Earth. So it doesn't need the principle of parsimony would say it's more likely to be an airburst shower than a major solar outburst that we have no analog for. And I know, like, obviously we have geochemical evidence of these events in the past, but like the Miyake events, for example, but we don't know the physical effects on the Earth other than the geochemical signatures. So we don't know whether there's lightning that hits the ground and creates like the same sort of thing as an airburst or what. So It's possible. I don't think anyone in the CRG rules it out, but there's no evidence to suggest that it's solar over an airburst. Except the evidence that Shock uses for the solar airburst is like the petroglyph people in the sky, right? Sure, it could, maybe, but that's not the sort of evidence that can be used to diagnose a solar airburst outburst like that. It's like third or fourth tier evidence. Like, it's something cool to consider, but it's not like it doesn't legitimize the theory.
Less falsifiable. Yeah, thanks, Ken Dewey. I try not to let the trolls get to me. I started this account, like I started doing this to comment to people that were making bad faith arguments against Hancock. So that stuff does does get my attention. Does building condos make you qualified to discuss pyramid construction? Does
more Flint, qualified than you, dickhead?
Does Flint working with dick bones and seeds make him qualified to weigh in on underwater archaeology, metallurgy, or any of the other things that he talked about except for dick bones and seeds? He's going to think that that's okay for Flint. That's obviously one of the funniest things about this, is that I'll be quick to admit that I'm not an expert in these fields, and that what I say isn't necessarily gospel truth. But I will also be quick to point out that the guys that I usually go after, guys like Flint or Hoops, there's no question. Like, when Flint challenged everybody, his last response and said, "Oh, Dan doesn't know anything about any of the data. Fucking don't listen to anything. He doesn't know. Okay, fine. Ignore all the data. Just watch Flint lie." Just like the crackhead you saw ripping off the Walmart and talking to the cop trying to get out of it. The kid in the hand and cookie jar. Here is that same shit. Data be damned. And that's, I don't know why these guys are so transparent with it, but it does. It's a frustrating thing.
Flint is not a scholar in the field, apparently. Oh, I'm sure he'll like that.
Oh, yeah. Flint is not a scholar in the field. You're right. So he shouldn't have been on the Joe Rogan debate talking about all those things.
Yeah. Why is he debating about archaeology on Graham Hancock then? That's kind of weird.
He's talking about metallurgy. What does the man know about metallurgy? Nothing.
Hey, usually right. Suck my dick.
Hey, here's the thing. If as I was saying earlier, it's okay for scientists to be themselves and to like lash out and to take stabs at people. It's we're discussing right now, like, you're not out here saying the people that have different hypotheses are fucking retarded. You're saying the people that are calling you retarded can eat a dick. And that's a huge fucking difference there. And of course, it's going to be lost on all these people. You are refuting someone who is focused on food and classical pizza. Dr. Steve, will I find a single comment from you on Flint Dibble's video saying that he shouldn't have done the debate because he's underqualified? Just checking, because I am going to be looking when this is done. And when I find none, I'm going to remind you that next time. God, this guy's a fucking joke. But yeah, that... The whole situation with this, with the dishonesty side of it, it really, like we were talking about a little bit, it took me into soul searching on some of this, because I can't. That Dr. Ice Core, man, he fucking kicked the wind out of me on that. I can't
believe that happened to you. That's so fucked.
Yeah, it's. Oh, where'd you go? Shit. Oh my God. Mark, you disappeared. Oh, there you're back. All right, let me add you to the stage. Bam, there you are. All right.
Sorry, I don't know what happened there, guys.
No, it's all right. I'm a meme now. I'm a joke. I'm a meme. Yeah. All right, Dr. Steve, make sure and mention that to them. Antonio, you're great. You totally got me here. Oh, the ice core thing, Akio. When I did my first video on the metallurgy, I wanted to talk to an ice core specialist to make sure that my suspicions were right, that they had never done any testing at all for metallurgy in the Ice Age, because I had found that that was the case. It looked like, but you know, you're looking for negative evidence, basically. So I talked to an ice core specialist who will remain nameless because he has to be out of the whole debate from now on. But I spent an hour with the man on a Zoom chat, and it was very clear to him that I was going to use the information to make a video about Flint Devil lying on the Joe Rogan Experience. I was very clear to him about what my questions were, and he was very clear to me with his answers. And then he retracted them basically as soon as he was pushed. He retracted them. Yeah, I think we will just get rid of this guy. Ban user and delete comments. Bye, Antonio. Fuck off. You spam the place. I don't mind somebody coming and talking shit, but when you just fill the whole page with shit, it does get irritating for the rest of us. But anyway, so when he retracted his statement, basically, he waffled, and I reached out to him and pushed him, and he did kind of somewhat fix it. But the fact of the matter is, I know what his feelings are, and I know what he told me, and I know how he changed his opinions when he got pushed by other scientists, and that did a number on my perception of his entire field. There's like a dozen ice core specialists on the fucking planet, man, and one of them, the one that I dealt with, is I'm 100%. If he presented data and they said, dude, this is fucking way out there. Are you sure about this? Oh, hang on a second. Let me go back to the drawing board here. I'm 110% on that. He is not willing to rock the boat. He proved that. And these guys are archaeologists. They don't even fucking work with him. He goes to fucking Antarctica. They ain't even gonna be nowhere than a billion miles. But it don't matter. He's still, and that really changed my perception of science.
Yeah, it can be disheartening seeing that some of these people don't seem to have a spine. Like, the second that there's public pushback, the defense mechanisms kick in. Like, oh, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. If you're going to have a conversation with someone with the goal of educating them, you don't just rip that out from under them, because then they don't know what to think. Like, was what you were telling them bullshit, or is what you're telling them now bullshit?
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty, okay, the biggest one there is, like, the people now that have watched my video and watched Flint's video and taken away what Dr. Icecore told them, they have a faulty perception of how they determine whether or not lead is from an anthropological origin or natural origin when they look at it in ice core. Now they have the wrong idea, because they're letting Flint, he's letting Flint basically control the narrative in this community. So now the narrative has fuck all to do with real science. It has everything to do with making sure that Flint wasn't lying when he was on Joe Rogan. And that's just like, dude, first of all, the lie has fuck all to do with that. The lie was him putting up a graph from the Roman period and talking about the Ice Age. That was the lie. The data about the lead and stuff, that's him just not thinking things through. Because the way that they determine if lead is from an anthropological origin or anthropomorphic origin or whatever, or a fucking natural one, anthropogenic, that's the word. The way they determine that is based on archaeological sites or lack thereof. If they go dig and they find a spike in lead, and they can't find any archaeological site that correlates to that, but they do find something else that could explain it, guess what they use? The other thing that they have. But the dust that's kicked up off of the topsoil has the same lead that the dust kicked up from somebody digging. This dust kicked up by wind has the same isotopes as the dust kicked up by digging. So it's basically Flint was saying that there was no metallurgy in the Ice Age because of lead levels, when lead levels do this throughout the Ice Age. And that's a fact. It doesn't mean that there was metallurgy. Graham doesn't believe it. I don't believe it. But I wanted to make 110% sure, recruited Ice Core guy, and he basically flaked on me. So that sucked.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I there are a lot of scientists that I do have that I do like a lot. There's a lot of archaeologists besides you that I get along, still get along with well, but they don't like me to talk about them. They want to email me only, and they don't, you know, a lot of them even block me on Twitter so that they fucking look like they're playing the game, right? It's kind of hilarious. But
yeah, academic freedom is a concern these days, unfortunately. Especially in America, for example, it's not so bad here. I mean, my experience as an archaeologist in Australia is good. Like, I've been well supported by all my academic supervisors. I've been given every opportunity. Obviously, not everyone agrees with the Young and Dry stuff here, but they're open to it. They treat it fairly.
That's great.
I've never been suppressed or blocked or denied from anything. Whenever there's a new early date for human occupation here, the default, as long as the science is sound, the default is, that's cool.
Nice.
Extra 10,000 years, cool. Whereas in America, it's like, fucking kill that guy.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like you say, literally.
Yeah, Delahaye. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's interesting too, because like we just found with Easter Island, with Rapa Nui, like now there's recently the stuff about human DNA, but they already knew that the first occupied layers that they've excavated had both ginger and sweet potatoes. It showed that the earliest occupants had been in contact with Asia and with South America, and now you get to Thor Heyerdahl, which is like he's. He had some pretty sketchy beliefs and stuff. By modern standards, he was definitely not a good person. But when he said that the rock walls in South America looked a fuck a lot like the ones at Rapa Nui, he was right. And he was he was drugged for that for up until now. All the way up until now, that was called pseudoscience. And only now. Yep. And To another example of this, I forget the guy's name, but the dude that was the first person to posit that the Vikings beat Columbus to the Americas by a kajillion years, right? His data was like two pieces of good information and like 1,000 pieces of bullshit. But he believed it and he was right. So nowadays he would have been discarded out of hand. They would have looked at the bullshit data and thrown him out. Hell. Nowadays, we wouldn't even get calculus because they would be like, Newton, you fucking alchemist? Fuck that guy. That calculus has got to be corrupt. So they would throw that out too. That's just the way it works now. Sad. Thank you, Ben, very much. Much appreciated.
Yeah, the Easter Island thing is quite interesting. Obviously, on your last live stream, you were showing that little potential walkway. I don't think it was a walkway. It could have been a dot of islands that let them travel. Oh, like they could...
Matt Bell?
Sorry?
When Matt Bell, when he was talking about that?
Matt Bell. Yeah, it was Matt Bell. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. I've never seen that before. That's quite interesting. I think that needs to be explored further.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't mean like I agree with you that it probably wasn't a walkway, but that's it's still very interesting and does need to be explored further in the context of this. Thanks, Robert.
Island hopping is much more realistic than just sailing straight across the ocean directly to the only fucking rock within 1,000 miles. Like,
oh yeah, and it would also explain why that area was sacred later on. It would be, you know, I mean, if it was a sacred area and then slowly. Everything slowly eroded away and there wasn't a good place to live anymore. It's still a sacred spot. It's a sacred spot. So it's pretty interesting. It's funny to me because, you know, Theodol got all kinds of bullshit for this and it wasn't a bad, I mean, all he did was look at some construction and say, those rocks look like those rocks, but he was right. I mean, and they did, it wasn't the normal, I'll give him this. It wasn't the normal polygonal masonry that we see where they just say, this is polygon masonry, this is a polygon. These were very, very similar with the rounded stones at the corners carrying the majority of the load. And just, it was very similar architecture. But the Rongo, yes, the missing script. It's not missing, but it's untranslatable nowadays, right?
And then you've got people like John Hoops who would make the opposite argument. So rather than, oh, some guy said it earlier and now it's confirmed, or Hoops will say, oh, well, because Isaac Newton and Winston Halley said that the Ice Age was ended by a comet, that means that these modern guys are just regurgitating pseudoscience from centuries ago, rather than confirming the fucking hypothesis with modern instruments that allow us to see the evidence that they couldn't see back then. And Hoops will say that because these guys talked about it previously, that debunks the YDOH as pseudoscience. He has said that to me in
really?
The first debate that we had. Because my first little spat with Hoops was when he posted on Twitter about the Younger Dryas bibliography that I maintain. You've seen that, haven't you? So he was trying to say that bibliography is biased. And not only that, not only is it biased, check out a non-biased take on the YDIH by coming and looking on Wikipedia. So he was directing people away from a list of scientific papers that they can read themselves with one click of a button to go and read the drivel that he posted on Wikipedia about it.
Yeah.
And he's saying that I'm biased for presenting all of the literature, not suppressing anything. All the critical ones are there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that the way that he's handled it.
The reason he called it biased is because it didn't include all these earlier things from Halley and Winston and Newton, who said these things. And it's like, yeah, because it's a bibliography of the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, not a bibliography of vague narratives of catastrophism.
Hoops, did you see the video I did on the, yeah, I think you did, because you talked like you did a couple of times, where the stuff that he did to John Major Jenkins was just that absolutely lying about him in a journal and leaving the lie in print even after it was challenged. That is the kind of thing that, like, when a bunch of people were trying to get Flint Dibble fired for his thing on the Joe Rogan Experience, my opinion is that was Flint doing his personal thing. Now, he was playing Flint the archaeologist, but he wasn't on the clock. He wasn't teaching his students. That's not necessarily indicative of how he handles dick bones and fucking grains of rice. But when John Hoops publishes fake shit in a paper, in a journal, he's doing his job, and he's doing it fraudulently. At that point, I think that guy should lose his fucking job. I think he has no place in the halls of academia. He is intellectually dishonest and is perfectly willing to be openly dishonest.
I've got maybe a bit of a hot take here, but I would say the opposite.
Oh, so, really? Go for it.
So, obviously, Hoops has published a provable lie in a journal, and that's pretty bad. But what's the reach of that, do you think? There's maybe 50 people who've read that paper.
Yeah, insignificant.
What Flint does is very different.
Yeah.
Because he's influencing millions of people. A bit of a hot take here, but if I think he should be fired. Like, you shouldn't be allowed to do, like, obviously it's difficult, but there has to be a certain point where it's too far, right?
Yeah. I see that. My thinking on it is this. I guess ultimately, if Hoops got fired, he will never again put a paper into print like that. If Flint got fired, he could be back on Joe Rogan tomorrow. Yeah. So that's really where I'm coming from. Is this isn't actually, but I get the sentiment, because Flint definitely did a lot more damage with his lies than Hoops has done. Flint has done so like I said, the people now that they've got these erroneous ideas on how they determine whether or not lead is from a human or a natural source. because of him. They've got all kinds of erroneous. They think there's 3 million fucking shipwrecks because of him. There's all kinds of little things like that that he could post all the retractions he wants. It's not going to get the traction that his experience on him being on JRE is. And, you know, I could make 50 more videos and they wouldn't in all of them could get 100,000 views and it still wouldn't get the reach that the Joe Rogan experience got. So it's like, dude, I hear you there. It's just, I also think personally that most academics I would assume that, like, say you called up John Hoops University and you're like, man, that John Hoops guy in your fucking anthropology department, that guy, blah, 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 blah. I think that they're probably kind of inoculated against this. And they're probably just like, if you're not an actual scientist going through the scientific channels, go fuck yourself. But and it probably actually makes things look worse overall, I would think. But I am all for doing like properly organized activism in those regards, a fucking letter to their employer and stuff. But like a mad dash of 5,000 people sending hate emails is never going to do anything.
Well, you'd be surprised. If someone gets to work on Monday morning and they have 5,000 emails to read, they're gonna make sure that stops. Like they probably won't outright sack him, but they'll tell him to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that's true. That's a big part of why I'm hoping that these guys will learn from the way that I've reacted to this to a degree. Because I'm not like the be all end all or anything, but I drug Flint pretty hard over this, and he knows for a fact. If he would have just, when Joe said, hey man, what about this racism thing? If Flint would have said, you know what, I shouldn't have done that. I said these things and I shouldn't have said it. I'm sorry, man. Fuck. I would have not made a goddamn video about that debate. But instead he doubled down on this shit. And that's the one thing I'm just so fucking tired of it. Man. You may as well be saying that we all visited Epstein Island. I don't want to hear it. Fuck you.
It would have been so easy to say, hey, I was wrong. Sorry. But his ego won't let him do that.
That's not.
He has to double down. It has to triple down. He has to invent insane lies to defend the less insane lies that he started with. It's just a feedback loop.
Yeah, it's grotesque, sadly. I think I'm going to call it in about a half hour here at 10 o'clock, if that my time, if that was for you, Mark. That's getting sounds a little good. Cool. But yeah, this has been a good conversation so far. Hey, Big Rolling Home, I haven't said hi to you yet, but I see you there, bro. He's a regular who's not a hater. I got quite a few of them in the comments that are good people too, but I don't yell at them as much as I yell at Steve. But yeah, the way that the debate, the aftermath has been, the way that so many guys, like people that really have no dog in the fight, Destiny, for fuck's sake, what the fuck is he doing interviewing Flint Devil? Jesus, titty fucking Christ, man. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I'm like, is that really Destiny? Who the fuck AI deepfaked this shit? But no. And that's like, I mean, okay, there's a point where, like, there's guys like Autumn Shea Films, who I think he wears his politics a little too heavily on his sleeve, but I do like his content because he is capable of kind of rolling it back at times. But even he got in on this. He's like, oh, how to win a debate and get pseudoscience and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, these guys, man, they are all treating this like it was some great win for Team Science. And it's like, you guys don't understand. This is kind of one of the worst things that could have happened. The people that told Flint not to go were telling him the right thing. He shouldn't have gone, because this is another year. Go to any video where Graham Hancock's talking about the debate, and like go pick a short video where Graham Hancock's discussing the debate before it happens, and sort comments by newest first. And you will almost always see, yeah, but Flint lied. Yeah, Flint lied. Flint lied. Flint lied. This is not going away. This isn't going away ever. So. Sorry, dude. That's what happens when he could have undone those really easily too. He could have owned the shit or made some discussion about it. But instead, it's like you say, just doubling down, lies within lies, and then we end up here.
Yeah, I have to wonder to what extent the fact that Flint's dad was an archaeologist plays into his whole ego around the archaeology thing. Like, whether it's that he deep down knows that he's a nepotism baby and like he shouldn't be there, or whether it's because he feels so devoted to the discipline of his father that he takes any sort of questioning of it as a personal attack. Like it's complex, whatever it is, whatever's going on up there, it's complex.
It definitely is. And he is really ill-suited to comment on these things outside of his field of expertise. I give you a real salient example. This was before the debate, me and him, before we had actually would talk, and we were having a discussion, and I mentioned to him, we were talking about El Castillo at Chichen Itza, the pyramid with the undulating serpent when it equinoxes, right? And I was pointing that out to him, and he said that he believed that was an accident. They accidentally made it undulating serpent. And I asked him, I'm like, well, why would you think that? Well, you don't have any other examples of them doing that. Well, we have other examples of them playing with shadows in their observatories. Yeah, but that's not the same as an undulating serpent. It's like the same with the Sphinx facing due east. He thinks that's a nothing burger. And it's like, dude, go stand outside 10 minutes before dawn, watch the sun rise, and you tell me that something that points right at that fucking thing would mean nothing to the ancients. You're fucking crazy, dude. That's a natural outcrop of rock that pointed at the sun. The rising sun would be considered sacred in a lot of cultures. So, but this Flint doesn't know that.
Boils down to the bigotry of soft expectations, I think. The image that most people have in their mind of all these savages wearing loincloths, how could they possibly have had the ability to design it so that that happened intentionally? Motherfucker, it's right there. Like, all you need is the fact that it exists. Like,
I told him at that point, I said that I understand that thinking, but I don't need a second Antikythera mechanism to believe it exists. That's just one's good enough. It's proof that this is a thing. Mm-hmm. He was so ill equipped for that I honestly thought that Graham was going to wipe the floor with him, but instead, Graham. There's a moment in that video, that debate, that's really telling. When they're discussing one of the pyramids in South America, one of the sites, Sacsayhuaman, and Flint says, I don't really know if that's a picture of Sacsayhuaman or not, because it's one that Jamie put on the screen, right? And that is extremely telling. He's the only person watching in that entire debate that questioned the validity of an image that was presented. Now, why the fuck do you think it was in his head that somebody would be lying about the image they put on screen? Because that's exactly what he was doing. And nobody expected it. Nobody fucking expected it. So, yeah, he won the debate, you could say that way, but it's like you can't ever unring that bell, and the damage that was done to the field of archaeology in general, in the public mind, shit. And I'm not talking about the way he dressed, although that didn't help. But it's the first time I've commented on that. I've had so many people talk about that, and I never liked the comments or any of it. Every now and again, one will make me laugh my ass off. Like the one guy said, if he ever goes to the world's largest podcast, he's going to wear a suit that makes it look like he's shrinking too. That fucking tickled me. But, whatever, man. Maybe it was his dad's suit. I don't have a problem with him, like, loving his dad or idolizing his dad or any of that stuff. I don't, a lot of that stuff I don't have a problem with. I have a problem with scientists bullshitting their way out of stuff and lying to the public, and all the rest of the stuff is just window dressing.
The very first thing they teach you in Archaeology 101 is that archaeology is not like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
He still wants to dress like Indiana Jones for some reason. Honestly, it's shocking that he didn't have a whip hanging off his belt loop at the back.
Big Talking Heads video. The not moving of the neck in order to keep the hat pretty slick. That was like, goddamn. That was exactly what I was doing. I was like, man, fucking fuck, dude. That shit was so funny. It was like, that was just too much, man. Just too much. But again, that's not the stuff that people will laugh at that. People will make fun of that, the same as people will make fun of my appearance. It's going to happen, and I get that. But the lies and stuff, man, That's not one you're going to be able to get around anytime soon. And the fact that so many have got behind him and propped these things up, even when they've seen that they're lies, and they still, that just looks really fucking bad, man.
Yep.
Really.
And all it does with pure conspiracy theories, again, like, they, on the one hand, they crusade against this stuff without realizing that they're the principal producers of it.
Go ahead, sorry.
So you could argue that, oh, well, Graham Hancock and his ilk are the primary producers of it, but they're not. Fuck. I just lost my train of thought.
The archaeologists are the prime producers of the
They rail against these conspiracy theories, but they're the ones who produce it by misrepresenting the facts. Like, so if a pseudo guy comes out and says, well, aliens built the pyramids, cool. Like, that's just out there in the ether. People can believe it if they want. But then when you've got a credible person coming out and saying, promoting misinformation, that is what generates conspiracy theories.
That's exactly, like,
it's not some random on Twitter saying that aliens built the pyramids that make people spin off into all these autistic investigations on finding it. That's what people like Flint do. But that's the result of the rhetoric from the pseudo skeptics.
That's, I could not agree more. It's very much about no self-awareness, none whatsoever. They have no idea how they look on the outside, and they have no idea the problems they created. And so, like you said, when Graham says something about the pyramids or something, the way I always say it is that when you watch Ancient Apocalypse, you see Graham Hancock say, well, mainstream archaeology doesn't agree with this. And to anybody who's into science, that's a red fucking flag. That tells you right there, you need to research this claim. It's not in agreement with mainstream science. But when a mainstream scientist gets up there and says something that's fucking wrong, nobody's going to look twice, because not nobody, but most people won't. They just assume that the lab coat is equals authority.
Yep. Not necessarily, but let's just propose this. You could go one step further. Either it is a complete lack of awareness, or they are acutely aware of what they're doing. Because what I just said, they're the principal producers of the stuff that they get paid to debunk. Like, so they're creating their own industry.
That's true. And it is the kind of thing that, I never really thought about this, but you bringing that up, it's like, there are, one of the bylaws for the Society of American Archaeology is they're not allowed to make profit off of archaeology. An archaeologist isn't supposed to profit from their work outside of, like, their normal work, right? So things like YouTube and stuff might be getting into the part of that. But I could be wrong there, but that is what the bylaws say. I know I've read that. It could be that if you make sure that you've got one foot in the debunking sphere, that now all of a sudden you're not really just doing archaeology now, are you? You're a debunker. So maybe that's part of it. I mean, I always just assumed that it was a stepping stone on the way. You make a channel about archaeology and you have to debunk Graham Hancock, right? I mean, you need 10,000 views, right? So, but who knows? Maybe there's a little bit more to it than that, because yeah, it does. It is something that I've often wondered about. It's like, how do these guys monetize their channels and keep their SAA membership? But
because that's how it works in politics, right? The one famous example is that Lindsey Graham saying you can't kill Obamacare because it's an issue that we fundraise off of. So they're intentionally manipulating things to create an industry where they profit.
And that's
so I'm not saying that is what's happening, but I'm just saying it's a possibility. It's one of the only ways that you can rationalize what they do. Like, it's clear misrepresentation, clear lies. Either they're so dumb that they don't realize, or that it's intentional.
One of the two, yeah. That would, you know, I think a lot of them are, you know, a lot of these guys that are not, well, they want nothing to do with that whole mess. Like the guys that debunked Mini Minuteman, both of the archaeologists that Holly Laszlo Skinner cited in her paper. Both of those guys are, hell, I had one of the two of them show up in one of my premieres, and he's just picking on Flint. And he was like, yeah, you make sure and hold these guys accountable. He's actual real archaeologist and wants nothing to do with all of that shenanigans, but they're silent. These guys, they don't post very often. You won't see them very much at all. Yeah. I like Milo too. I don't agree with him on everything, but I do like Milo. He's one of the few people that I've made videos about criticizing that didn't lose their shit, didn't get all pissy, and would be like, yeah, okay, you got me on that one, man. Good job. That doesn't happen very often. So, well,
yep.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. I appreciate it. When 15 minutes from now, thank you. When you see this, man, thanks. Yeah, that, how do you put it? The whole entire industry of science in this, I guess you could say, has kind of morphed into this one ball that's, you said that it's about the trying to work together with the different fields, and that makes a lot of sense, but like I keep saying, man, when you've got anthropologists complaining about a geological hypothesis, there's a fucking problem, man. These guys have no business in that sphere whatsoever.
And I would just say that with the YDIH in particular, it is more fair than other things. Well, because of the human aspect. So when they first came out and proposed it, they said, well, it probably affected humans too. So that was the invitation for anthropologists to pile on and say, no, what's this route I'm talking about?
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
The only thing is, though, is it talks about the mysterious disappearance of the Clovis culture, basically. So it's like, well, unless you got a fucking answer for that, buddy, what are you going to do? Yeah. Say, I disagree with that answer? Okay, nice. Whatever. But yeah, it's been, reading through the Younger Dryas Impact Hypothesis literature, the back and forth, it is very reminiscent of the Clovis first debacle. Although the only person I would say that you need a 20-year-old Tom Dillahay, because that guy was a fucking savage. If you read how he responded to critics, he was like you here in the chat. He's fuck you, except for he'd put it in print. The guy could say that we think he might be fabricating evidence, and he'd just all but call that guy a motherfucker.
And that's something that I've found most other people in the comet research group, they don't want confrontation. They don't want to go out there and call someone a dickhead, but I've got no problem with that. I'm often the one out in the front lines on social media, like throwing some of the shit back at people, but most others don't like to get involved.
Yeah, that's
a big reason. And I respect that. It's professional for one thing. Like, I wouldn't call myself unprofessional, but I'm not going to sit there and take shit.
Yeah, but it's. I think a lot of it is just you can't calling it unprofessional is almost scientists, especially the dreamer side of things, or the skeptics. Like these guys, when you're working on stuff, this is like it's intricate. It's detailed. I'm just writing a script for a video. I can easily get derailed if I start in a Twitter flame war. Right? I can only imagine how much more details if you're a scientist. That's what I don't have a pet hypothesis. Really, I don't have a Younger Dryas Impact hypothesis or anything that I'm trying to promote necessarily as factual. Or I'm interested in a lot of these things. But I am my pet thing is to make sure that scientists are fucking doing this scientifically. That they're going to come in and weigh in on this, that they keep the social issues out of it, they keep the mudslinging out of it, and they just come in and talk about the fucking data. Because let's be honest, if freaking the biggest racists in the world came up with something and scientifically it's accurate, it doesn't matter how racist they were as far as the validity of that science goes. It's still, they're pieces of shit as humans, but that doesn't mean that their science is bad. So,
well, that was the basis for the Holocaust, right? The eugenics fueled the whole of the mid 20th century. Like, they had a scientific basis for what they were doing, whether it was real or not. But eugenics was the dominant paradigm back then, and that's what enabled that to happen.
And there was a lot of information pulled out of Mengele's labs that was got in very horrific ways that is still used today. So this is, I mean, the rockets that we put on the moon were the same fucking rocket, were just scaled up versions of the rockets that were being shot at London, and those were built by slaves. So I mean, it's like you can always play that game, but the reality, especially when you go back 150 years, I mean, one of the things I always mention when these guys get into that shit is Abe Lincoln used the N-word in personal correspondence numerous times. So does that make the Emancipation Proclamation a racist document? I mean, fuck. How fucking retarded can we take this? This is like,
not to defend the language, but that was the terminology back then, right?
That's my point.
It's just common parlance.
Susan B. Anthony, when she was arguing for the vote for women, at one point she said that she would like cut off her arm before she would allow a black person to vote before a woman. Now, since she used racism as a talking point advocating for women's suffrage, does that make women's suffrage based, rooted in racism? I mean, fuck. Obviously not, but if it was Graham Hancock, the answer would be yes. And that's where these guys, they're double standards, off the rails, emotionally motivated. That's a fuck all to do with reality and facts. It's just to do with what they want to be true.
Yes, and I'm sure the fact that we imported tens of thousands of Nazis and put them in high positions of power in the scientific community has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the situation that we find ourselves in today.
No, of course not.
Can't be related at all.
Nope, not at all. Absolutely insane. But yeah, what do you expect? It's like they tried to differentiate between all of this stuff. You know, there's a great song. It's still, if you look up Werner von Braun, if you look him up, there's a guy in the 50s that was made a song picking on him. And one of the lines is what goes up must come down, but that's not my department, says Werner von Braun, where he doesn't care where it lands. And they say some call him apolitical, but in reality, he's just hypocritical. Just all these little stupid lines like that. But the man was being blasted right when America put him into place. But we kind of forget that now. You don't hear that talked about very much.
Yep. And I'm sure, I mean, at least 50% of those people denied being involved with the Nazis when they probably were, right? They were probably supporting the regime. Like, oh, just following orders. Sorry, I don't believe that. Please give me a ticket to come to your country in a high-level position, paid position in research. I'll denounce everything.
Please don't send me to Stalin's side of the fence.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, you read about the space race and it's so hilarious. It's like we got Werner von Braun over here in America, and then the Stalin's like, we need to compete with them. Let's go to the gulag and get our best rocket scientist out of the fucking trenches and have put him in fucking lock in ditches for like 3 years. Fuck, man. That place is horrible. But that was It is a funny thing. But yeah, we're winding down here. We got just a few minutes left. You got some links that you want to, or any of the stuff that you want to shout out here?
Not a whole lot. My Twitter probably, Mark_Young_90. What else? Nothing really. Not much for personal promotion. I just kind of do things. This is my first podcast in like 2 years or something. So.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. Dang. That's awesome. I hope it went well altogether. It seems like it did, besides a few people in the comment section, but what do you do?
You're always going to have the odd retard here and there.
Yeah, that's just how it works. But yeah, I'm glad that you're in there swinging the stick despite being a scientist. That's why I get in there and do a lot of the fighting, arguing about these things, because I mean, like guys like Graham Hancock, man, the guy's a hippie basically by comparison to somebody like me. So like, you know, he doesn't want to get in a pit and roll with the pigs, but I'll do it if it needs done. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate it, all you guys. Yes, good old Nazi apologists. Hopefully you're not talking about us, Eris, but who knows? Who knows at this point? I've been called all kinds of stuff now. I don't even know anymore what I am, according to these people. But I do appreciate what you're doing there with the Comet Research Group. It's been a lot of interesting stuff, and I'd like to see the hypothesis keep moving forward, even if eventually it's determined that the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis isn't accurate. We need scientists, honest scientists, working on it and giving it a fair shake to ever get there. So that's awesome. And I'm thankful to even have you on here, to be honest with you. Like I'm just a pleb by comparison to you scientist-y people, so thanks.
I was where you are a couple of years back, so you've got a following, so you're already ahead of me in that way. So don't sell yourself short, Dan. You're doing an amazing thing. Like, there's a reason you're successful, because you found a niche that people are hungry for, truth, or treating ideas fairly.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. I'm going to go ahead and call it a night, everyone. Thanks for watching so much, and we'll see you guys all next time. Take it easy.
Thanks, everyone.